It's time for Twig this week in Google, and we're breaking out the McAllens because we're going to have an Irish wake for all the sad Google properties that have been discontinued, including a farewell to Google Plus next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 502, recorded Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. Inbox Nicorette. This Week in Google is brought to you by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Just remember your master password, and LastPass will remember the rest. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. And by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful, modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy Visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse. Oh, boy. This is a depressing day in the Googleverse, but fortunately, I have two of my favorite people to cheer me up. Both Stacy and Jeff are on assignment, as they say. Usually when they say on assignment in local news, it means they're throwing up in the back. But in this case, I think they actually are on assignment. Stacy's in Scandinavia. Jeff's in, like, England or somewhere. I'm so glad Aunt Pruitt's here, though. We love the aunt. Aunt Pruitt from Tech Republic. A regular on all of our shows, and as you might gather if you're watching the video, a Clemson Tiger fan.
You know it.
Just a little bit. Ann is a true gentleman, so it's always fun to have you on. I appreciate it, Ann.
Thank you for having
From, I want to say Atlanta, where are you?
No, I'm right outside of Charlotte.
Charlotte, that's right. And in honor of Ant, also Mike Elgin is here from Elgin.com. He is our Gastronomad at gastronomad.net. You just had your Mexico City
experience.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
We ate tacos, drank mezcal, and had a wonderful time.
Just ended
on Sunday.
Nice. Yeah. So Aunt always has a little bit of a little something from Scotland during the show. And in your honor,
sir.
So what are you drinking today?
I have a Glendulan 12-year single malt.
Yum.
Singleton.
Oh, and look, he's drinking it in exactly the right glass.
Yeah,
yeah,
look at
that. Yeah, the camera said, I'll take that.
Yeah,
that's good. We're doing a little, because I have some Abunda or something that Richard Campbell from .NET Rocks had suggested, but I guess I took it home. But fortunately, and I didn't even know I had this, but it was holding up my puppet, my Leo puppet.
Really?
It was stuck up his butt. And it's been there for years. I had no idea. There's only a few fingers left of a McAllen cask strength, sherry aged. So Mike and I are having a couple of fingers.
The bottle was full when we sat down. No, it's going to be a...
But there's a reason. This is an old-fashioned Irish wake.
Did you say you had Buna Haben prior to that?
No, Abunda, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
A-B-U-N-D-A-H, I think. It's an Abelur. Abelur Abunda. There it is.
Abelour.
Yeah, okay.
And for those of you at home, Irish wake is not a tax scheme used by
Google. Oh, it won't let me look at this until I say I'm over 18. So let me just make up a birthday. And this is it. The cask strength. I'm only drinking cask strength now because you get drunk faster.
You've transitioned from your life to the cask strength.
But this was a recommendation from Richard Campbell. And so that's what I'm drinking. But this McAllen is actually, I would say, as good, if not better.
It's certainly
really
the
good.
Best website I've ever seen out of a whiskey purveyor.
Yeah. Pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
You need to see the McAllen site.
Oh, really? Ooh. You like the McAllens? I like the McAllens.
I love McAllen. Yeah. I love it. 15 and 18.
I was going to say, I've never had this before, but the evidence is completely to the contrary.
I don't remember.
I just don't remember. It's been stuck up a puppet's butt for the last 10 years. I don't know. I don't know when we got this.
That bottle could talk.
It's aged in the puppet, and it's delicious.
Yes.
It's delicious. Anyway, we're having a little bit of a wake because yesterday was the end of the line for about 20 different Google products.
Yes.
It is so sad. Inbox. But the big one, and really, I think for Mike Elgin's point of view, probably the one the most mourn is Google Plus. And early in the day yesterday, we went there and it said we're shutting down, but it was still around. Later in the day, Google Plus is no longer available. It is. I mean, this is the page you get, and it's sad. I did download all my stuff.
So did I.
Hoping there'd be something of use in there. I doubt there is, but at least I have it. There was a lot. It was almost 4.5 gigabytes of stuff.
Yeah, I had a ton. And, you know.
Well, you use this in place of your blog for a while.
In place of everything. So back in the day, 2011, I gave up, I think I counted them, 12, 13, 14 services, including my blog, various social sites, a bunch of stuff. And I said, I'm just going to use Google Plus forever. And then it was awesome for about three years or so. And then after a while, Google Plus kind of fell apart and it wasn't what it used to be. And I started using other services. But there was 3 years where I used exactly one service.
Did you, Ant, were you a Google Plus or two?
He was.
I loved Google Plus.
Because as a photographer there, and Trey Ratcliffe used to say this too, there's nowhere better to show you, to share your photos.
Nobody remembers this, but back in the back in between 2011, 2014, 15, Facebook photos were just disastrously horrible.
They squeezed them.
Right. And that's why photographers loved it, because Instagram, the pictures were all square then and low quality, small, couldn't share them. And then Google Plus had these, like, they looked like full quality photos.
Yep.
And so eventually and grudgingly, Facebook improved their photos. But it took something like Google Plus to make them do it.
Ant, was it photo sharing for you that was the key
element? Photos and it was the community. I met so many awesome people over Google Plus that I'd never heard of. It's just regular Joes like myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in touch with them today. Now, granted, 90% of them have no use for the world of Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. But every now and then they pop in to Twitter to say hello and just keep up with each other. You know, it's I really enjoyed the community over there and I enjoyed the whole photo aspect of it until they started screwing it up.
Yep. And photo editing on Google Plus used to be better than the current editing is on Google Photos. And the other thing is that and most active users will confirm this, but it was the only social network that most of us ever used where you would make real friends and get together with those friends in real life. So, for example, the last hurl, I did a blog post about this. My last hurl, hangout in real life, was a week and a half ago in Mexico. Dude that I'd been interacting with here and there on Google Plus for years and years invited me to his house in Cuernavaca.
Wow.
Manuel. We hung out with his family for like the weekend. We took a road trip. We drank pulque by the side of the road. We ate crickets and armadillo together. seriously.
That's living.
That was the last hurl for me because that's the kind of thing that Google Plus used to enable you to do is meet people all over the world with whom you share various interests and become friends. And it really worked for that aspect.
Speaking of hangouts, I remember Baratunde Thurston during his book tour, if you will. And he was doing a little hangout on air and decided, you know what, I'm just going to let people join in.
Yeah.
And somehow he had me pop into his hangout, and it was one of the best experiences for me.
Yeah.
I can't say that for him, but it just being able to chat with him and tell him who I was, what I was doing, my endeavors and all of that good stuff. It was great. And to this day, I'm still in touch with Mr. Thurston. You know, we became
bonded
after that.
I did a hangout once that lasted 12 or 13 hours, I think. And I was actually, I drove from Silicon Valley to Santa Barbara, California, and kept it going the whole way. And the way that I did that was I started it with the camera was on an Apple in my house in Silicon Valley. And then I joined it
So there's no way I could show you Google Plus, except that there is still a YouTube channel of Google Plus. And so for people who don't remember how great this was, go ahead, keep going, Mike. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. So I had a camera pointed at an Apple, a physical Apple. And then I joined separately on the same account. And then a bunch of people were coming and going. And the thing lasted for many, many hours.
And what's great is every time the Apple talked, it would go full screen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. But unfortunately, that Apple wanted 33% of all the proceeds. So I shut it down after a while.
We used Google Plus for shows. We used it for sharing. We had Google Plus pages. If you're looking at the layout on our video right now, and again, thank goodness there
That's
are
the old logo.
Yeah, I think Google probably will take all these videos down. Let's see. Let me show you some more Google Plus videos because they still have a Google Plus page with a lot of how-to videos on it. It is kind of nostalgic to look at this. What did they do wrong? Because, you know, honestly, I thought Google Plus was exactly what a social network should be.
Yeah. So my theory...
They talked and didn't walk the walk.
Yeah. Well, my theory is that what they get wrong in all of these shutdowns is they don't value their most passionate users higher than their average users. And so I was listening to All About Android, I think it was, and they were talking, I think it was Flo was saying that, they're really, what they're doing really benefits the general users. It just bothers those of us who are early adopters, et cetera. My view, and it's a good point, but my view is that they really should value their passionate users more than their average users.
Every other media business, and I would submit that in this case, it's kind of like a media business, treats its, they call them P1 listeners, treats yes. its most avid listeners as more important because they're the bellwethers. They're the ones who influence others. They're the ones who make something grow.
And those are the ad people.
Yeah, they're the ones who care. And so those are the ones you want to push.
They're the ones who own and control podcast networks.
And so, So when you say they didn't walk the walk, Ant, what do you mean by that?
I was part of a couple of different communities, and one of them was a Google-hosted community. And they always talked about having this improvement and that improvement.
You're talking about the Create Plus or whatever it was called?
Yeah, create something.
Create something.
Yep. Yep. That sounds right. And I get all of these emails and messages about this and that, and none of it ever happened, especially when it came to controlling spam. You know, I'm not a big account, if you will. I didn't have millions of followers and things like that. And it was a challenge for me to just manage going through the spam notifications and turning this off and turning that off. And it just got.
Yeah. And it did get worse and worse. It wasn't a big problem early on, but as Google Plus became abandoned.
Right.
It became overrun with
right.
spam.
The quality went way down. The junk went way up.
Isn't that kind of inevitable, though, for social networks that they're fun when it's just you and your friends and then as soon as everybody else arrives?
I can't say that because me being the big introvert that I am, I don't really meet a lot of people, so I don't have a ton of friends, if you will. But Google Plus connected me to thousands of people, and it's sort of crazy that I can say I would recognize a couple hundred different names because I saw them so regularly in my feed as engaging every single day.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we live in an age where one of our biggest problems politically and socially is that we're all in our own little worlds, and we're getting to the point where we can't relate to people in other countries or on other political perspectives. And Google Plus was the only social network where you're constantly meeting people from all over the world. In Facebook, how many Pakistani people have you met in Facebook that are, like, have become your friends? How many,
right.
you know what I mean? It's like it doesn't happen. Facebook keeps you fenced in to your own existing world, whereas Google Plus, it was all based on interests. And so, like, what Ant was saying, like, you'd be having conversations with, you know, 30 people, and, like,
none of whom you knew.
Right. Five of them were from the U.S., and most of whom were became familiar to you because they were constantly engaging in conversations with you and stuff like that. Was just really a unique social network.
It also is, and maybe this is just me, but I think it's beautiful. I think it's a good design. It didn't play as well on mobile. Is that part of the problem? It came to us, you know, 5 years ago when mobile was just beginning to rise.
Yeah.
This is really best on desktop, I think.
I started having performance issues about 2 years ago on mobile and on the desktop service. It was just not refreshing and not loading. I'd see things that was 2 days old or several hours old. So I was always behind. And when I mentioned this to the support people as far as leave feedback or whatever, it went nowhere. It just continued. And then when my images started looking like, you know, 8-bit images, I was done.
So you think they abandoned it early on? Is that so? The history of Google Plus is that Vic Gundotra, who at the time was, I think, a vice president of Google, really lobbied hard. And we've read stories from people that this was Vic's baby, and he got everybody enrolled. In fact, at one point, your bonus at Google, no matter what division you were in, was based on your social, about how well you'd integrated social into your product.
That started in 2011. That was Larry Page's first edict when he became the CEO.
And Vic was Larry's fair-haired boy.
That's right.
And Larry bought into it. And so Google Plus was a very, was like the number one initiative from Google for about a year.
Yeah. I have a theory about what happened. So my theory is that Vic Condotro was not culturally a good fit for Google. Why?
He's gone.
Because he understood people. And this was just like, you know, he was more of an Apple kind of person, like, even though his background was actually at Microsoft. But he was a very warm people person who really worked hard. He was very engaging, very charismatic. And Google, they don't have time for that. You know what I mean? It's like, so I think there was a war between Vic Condotro and Sundar Pichai that probably raged the whole time that Vic was there doing his Google.
Sundar won.
And so I think that as soon as Sundar won, they're like, okay, we're deprioritizing this. And
it was political.
All the things
basically
that Ant mentioned, this is essentially moving human and compute resources off of Google Plus and using them for other things. Mm-hmm. And then Sundar Pichai himself, his last Google Plus post, I think, was 2016, right? And he was using Twitter. Like, how are you the CEO of a company that owns a social network and you use the competitor social network? It'd be like Mark Zuckerberg ignoring Facebook and instead doing everything on Twitter.
There were also issues, much like Microsoft's infighting issues, with different teams. I remember there was a long Twitter thread a few months ago by somebody who was on one of the teams who said that the Gmail people wouldn't refuse to integrate the features from Google Plus in because they had something similar and they didn't want to. And this was something that almost killed Microsoft. Because this, you know, if it doesn't, Windows team and Office team and fighting any other
silos.
Team. Yeah, silos. Google Plus wasn't perfect. Circles might have been a bad idea.
Yep.
But on the other hand, the thing that really is frustrating is things like Picasa, which Google bought, then turned into Google Photos. Eventually, all the best features were migrated to Google Plus because Google's thinking, well, this is our future. Then they've disappeared now because that wasn't the future. It was a dead-end road, and they just sent them off into the bit bucket. Hangouts, which at the time was the chat interface for Google Plus, has really struggled since.
President Obama did Hangouts.
Remember that?
Air. Yeah.
Trey Ratcliffe, we had a show that was Trey doing Hangouts.
Yep.
And it was easy for him to do. He was in New Zealand already, but it was on our network because he could do it from New Zealand. Other people could join him. He'd have the six people. When Hangouts first started, I had a number of different panels via Hangouts.
I used to love watching that show.
Trey's show? Yeah.
So I think
that way, I think that was that you, Mike, or just somebody who looks like you? No, just somebody who looks like me, actually.
Middle-aged guy with
gray hair, middle-aged guy.
Yeah. Glasses. Yeah, okay. It could be both of
them. It's generic. I think they're using that this person does not exist GAN generation to generate these people. You know, some of the things persist. Those little thumb icons, those are still around in Hangouts.
Yep.
But most of this stuff just went down the tubes.
I just can't imagine. The only explanation for killing it is politics, revenge, something internal, something Microsoftian. Remember back in the old days of Microsoft, every Microsoft division was at war with every other division, and it really harmed them, like during the Ballmer years. And I think that they've gotten better to a certain extent because they've overcome that to a certain extent. And because there's no reason not to keep Google Plus going. Like, it thrilled the most passionate.
That's a really
users.
Interesting point. Why kill it? How much could that have cost them to keep it going?
Exactly. It could be the laboratory for all kinds of new ideas. This thing that Ant Pruitt mentioned a minute ago, the Create Plus community or whatever it was called, was the worst idea you could imagine. I thought that as a policy, that whole program was all about harming Google Plus. Because what they did was they personally reached out to people like Ant Pruitt and said, okay, you're like, you know, you're a content creator. You create all this great content for Google Plus. We're going to create a closed community just for people like you. And so they took the most creative, productive people and they gave them a place to post things where nobody could see it.
That's right.
Why would you do
walled
that?
Walled it off.
Like, you want those people posting in public and evangelizing the network.
And that's what I was doing. I was just double posting.
Yeah. I would just go in there occasionally and complaining about it and then leaving.
Here's another example. This was Google Plus Events, which you would publicize an event.
Oh yeah.
With invitations.
This was awesome.
And then everybody who was at the event could turn on party mode, and the pictures from the event would all be shared into a Google Plus event thread.
I love that.
This would kill today. If somebody announced that today, it would kill.
There are young people watching the show right now that didn't ever see that feature and are now saying, wow, really? That's amazing. I want that. It's like crazy.
I started my smartphone photographers community on Google Plus, and having features like that was just, it was great for content. It was so easy, and it was all at the click of a button.
Now I'm just getting angry.
Yep.
Now I'm just mad.
I need a drink.
This is why we broke out the whiskey. Doesn't this hurt Google that they keep doing this to stuff? Doesn't this, I mean, honestly, this.
Not when all you're worried about is AdWords.
You know, Major League Baseball, it's almost 20 years ago now, had a strike. And the season was canceled, and then they lost part of another season. And for me, baseball never was as good again. Yeah. I was a huge fan. I went to 40 or 50 games a year the year before the strike. Mm-hmm. I maybe won game a season since the strike, and I don't watch it on TV. This reminds me of that because, this isn't what all that Google does, but this broke my heart.
Yeah.
And honestly, I have to think this hurts Google. I understand Ruth Porat, their CFO, is looking at division saying it doesn't make money, cut it. That's good business. But you also have to recognize the social role, especially a company like Google plays, and acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And the damage this does to the company, I think, is significant.
Yep. They did this on small projects for many, many years. There are graveyards and so on that show all the Google products that were killed. There's a really good one that came out recently.
Yeah, we were showing it a couple of weeks ago, the Google Graveyard. Yeah.
But when they killed Reader, that's when you first really started hearing people.
Reader was another one.
Yeah, that was the first big one that people were really passionate
These
about.
These are live hangouts like we were talking about.
Yeah. And then it was one thing after another. And now it's like a bloodbath this week of all kinds of things that are being killed. And
April 2nd was like...
Yeah. The night of long knives.
It's the night of long knives. And I
think a challenge they had was trying to answer the question that I got every single time I mentioned Google Plus. Well, who's over there that I know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true of all social networks, right? I'm on a number of... attempts to replace proprietary social networks with open federated networks. So Mastodon instead of Twitter, Pixel Fed instead of Instagram, which I really like, but there's no one there.
Yeah. Well, as journalists, like we kind of have to be on Twitter because it's like crack cocaine.
I cannot do it. I can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, but I just, for me, I'm on Twitter because I compulsively have to just blurt something out sometimes, and so I do it on Twitter. It's great for that, but
that's the place to do it.
Yeah, but it's like you say, like I get 100 people a week saying, "Are you going to go on WeMe? Are you going to go on Plus Spora? Are you going to go? You know, you're going to try." Spora. LinkedIn as a social. It's like I can't be on all of them, and if I'm on any one of them, it's like a tiny community. So I'm just doing what you're doing, Leo, and mostly focusing on the blog.
Yeah, so. we really lost something. I'm sad to say, and it's not just Google Plus. Inbox. And did either of you use that? I didn't, but I've kind of got off Gmail.
Yeah,
I never used it, but I am glad to see some of the features slide on over into Gmail because I'm not an inbox zero kind of guy, so inbox just never really worked for me.
Yeah.
But it's nice seeing stuff like that snooze feature and other things like that popping up inside of Gmail to make my life easier.
Yep, and they're going to be adding a feature pretty soon where you can schedule emails. So when you launch a new email, you can say, send this out next month at Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So that's going to be pretty cool. But
that's awesome.
I went back and forth between the two, and I am an inbox zero kind of guy. And the second they mention they're going to kill inbox, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to invest a lot of time.
You can't. And I'm telling you, that hurts Google because Lisa, who is not as obsessive about this stuff as we are, I can't remember what it was, some new thing. Mm-hmm. She said, well, I'm not going to do that. It's Google.
Right.
And that's, I think, honestly, that's got to be a very common point of view. This is the one of many sites, but this is the one we were talking about, killedbygoogle.com.
Yeah.
And it's 155 apps and services. And I mean,
I totally forgot about the URL shortener and missed the boat on
goo.gl is gone.
Yep.
Inbox by Gmail. What are some of the other ones? YouTube annotations. Chromecast Audio, 3 months ago. And this was a great product.
Someone in the chat room pointed out that FeedBurner still exists.
Which is weird, because I thought they'd kill it the minute they bought it.
I just think they can't find the password.
I was sure. When we started Twit, FeedBurner was the way you created feeds. We used FeedBurner. Google bought it. I thought, well, it was fun.
Yeah.
It's over now. This 12 years later, it's still alive. It's ignored.
Right. It's like that guy, after World War II on the Japanese islands.
Yeah, nobody
defending the island. Nobody told him the war's over.
Nobody told him the war's over. Project Tango, saved a Google Chrome extension, Google Goggles, Glass OS, Spaces.
And I'll point out that a third of these products were going to be the future of all
Project Era. Now, I was just, that's the one where it was the modular smartphone. Right. I didn't think highly of it, but a lot of people thought, oh, this is what you want, because you add features to your phone as you need them. It was a Motorola project. Google bought it.
Didn't they announce they're going to distribute that from Puerto Rican taco trucks or something like that? Was that Ara?
Yes. Remember that? It was made in Puerto Rico, I think. Yeah. Gone.
I was like looking for flights. I was going to go.
Google Now. Remember Google Now? At the time, I thought that was going to be that was it. It was over. That was the
we
next big thing.
We still have remnants of that right now, though, right?
Yeah, sort of. If you go to the Google app, it's a little bit of Google News. It's a little bit of Google Now.
Yeah.
It's not anything, and that's really the problem. It's not anything.
Right.
It's just a thing. And again, nobody's going to invest in any of this if you can't count on Google to keep it around.
I think Google, the only thing that could save Google's reputation at this point is if they had a new policy, and if Google, if you're listening, and I hope you are, every time you launch a new service, you should essentially promise that you won't kill it for at least a certain amount of time. So like, for example, you launch a new service and you should say, okay, we're not going to kill this till 2030. And if they change their mind later and want to kill it even later than that, they should update that. But everything should have we promise we won't kill it by this date. And then people could look at that and go, okay, I'm going to use it.
I wouldn't, because I know they're going to kill it in 5 years. Right.
They would kill that program.
So it's like, I'm not going to put any energy into that. Oh, man. This list is I need a drink.
This is, to a certain extent, they're the new Yahoo. Because I remember for years, you'd learn about Yahoo products when they cancel it. And you're like, wow, that sounds incredible.
All right.
Yeah, I heard, Yahoo's doing that? No, they're not.
No, they just, they bought it, they ignored it, now they're killing it.
So what lessons, what have we learned? I mean, here's a piece from Adweek. I don't exactly think Adweek knows what we learned from the shutdown of Google+, but the aim, according to Vic Gundotra, was to transform Google into a social destination at a level and scale never previously attempted. Now, remember, the climate of the time was Facebook is eating our lunch,
right,
that web search has no future. The social graph is going that Facebook's using for search is going to eat us alive. We've got to do something. Yeah. Now, the irony is Facebook's social graph search died shortly after they launched it. Facebook's as bad as Google,
right,
in that regard. Mark Zuckerberg reportedly considered Google+ to be an existential threat. He declared an internal lockdown. No one can leave until we can come up with a way to effectively counter it.
Right. I remember those heady days. Basically, Eric Schmidt, 2010, I think it was, said that articulated Google's social strategy to counter the Facebook threat. And he basically said, we're going to build social into everything. So if you recall Google Reader, before they killed it, you could suddenly share. You could get algorithmic sorting of your feed and all this horrible stuff that doesn't belong in a RSS reader.
Right.
And this policy of everybody's bonuses are tied to social actually was implemented when that was the policy, when you're going to have an inside-out social network with social built into everything. Vic Gundotra's apparently won the day, won the argument, and said, no, we need an actual destination. And we're, instead of everything having social, everything is going to be built into or supported by our social network. So they forcibly shoehorned in YouTube and all these other things. And that became the new policy. And I think that was the right policy, actually. I thought it was, I think they were too aggressive.
From a revenue point of view, it was.
Well, from just like a give your most passionate users a place to go and evangelize your products other than Facebook. You know what I mean? It's like give your passionate users a playground where they can do all this amazing googly stuff and play with AI, interact with each other and post amazing pictures and post amazing pictures from the phones that you guys are selling. Like there's a lot of promotional benefit to having a place to every time there's a Google announcement. They used to announce them on Google Plus and everybody would go to Google Plus and, you know, comment on Google's announcements. Individual engineers were announcing different products.
Well, that was the best thing about Google Plus. If you wanted to talk to somebody at Google, they were there.
They were there.
That was cool.
In fact, that was the kind of the rap on Google Plus was, well, the only people there really are the Googlers themselves, but that's not bad.
There were two kinds of complaints about Google Plus, and this is one of the problems with the network structurally. But Ann Pruitt said, I couldn't keep up. It was a fire hose of activity. And then other people would be like, nothing's happening. There is no activity. Yeah. So it was one or the other. Nobody had the right amount of activity on their feed.
And Circles didn't really do the right
thing. Circles were too confusing. I think Google overestimated the patience.
Yeah, you had to spend a lot of energy to cultivate and create your Circles. And then the other thing Google did wrong, and they did it with Google Buzz first, and then they did it with Circles, which was your contact list now is populated by all these Circles.
Yeah.
I still have birth dates of people that I followed in Google Plus Circles.
Yeah.
I don't care about their birthday.
I'm trying to figure that out. I was like, why do I have this person's phone number?
Because of Circles. They're in your Circle. Actually, I think Marion Riedel in Adweek has kind of got it right. She says, or he says, in many ways, Google Plus was a startup.
Yeah.
It lacked the heart of a founder, the ultimate product owner, the caretaker who seriously invested in the product and fights endlessly on its behalf. That's what Vic did in the early days, but once he left...
He got rid of him.
He got rid of him. Once a political battle. It's like Game of Thrones in there.
Yeah, right.
You know, and he's like Robert Baratheon, the crazy king. He got kicked out. He's got his head chopped off, and now, you know, it's somebody else. While Google may be breathing a collective sigh of relief with the Google Plus shutdown, Google's biggest loss, and this is Marion Riedel writing, she is the CEO and founder of PatchPost. So I think she's really right on, actually, now that I've read this.
Mm-hmm.
Google's biggest loss is one the company may never have internalized was theirs to lose. The hard-won, heartfelt trust of millions of community members who used Google Plus. That loss, more than anything, speaks directly to how the Google Plus debacle came about and why it's displaced community members. Maybe I don't agree with this. Will ultimately be better off on new platforms that pay a high premium, place a high premium on what it means to value and serve that trust. I don't know who that is. It's not Twitter. It's not Facebook.
Well, there is no place.
There is nowhere.
But she makes, that's a similar point to one that I've made as well, which is that if you keep destroying the platforms that you have gotten your most passionate users to embrace, they will find somebody else's platform to love.
Right.
In the world of social, I don't know what that is. Facebook is unlovable. But like in other things, you know, in email, for example, right? If people who are super invested in inbox, they're going to say screw Gmail. In fact, later in the show, I'll be talking about
screwing Gmail.
Screwing Gmail.
I'm talking about that
company. I'm going to talk about a company that's basically saying this is our opportunity to steal Google users off of Gmail.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Ron Amadio, Ars Technica. Google's constant product showdowns are damaging its brand. Please just stop closing things, he writes. Google's product support has become a joke, and the company should be very concerned. He also mentions Google Fiber.
Yeah.
Allo. I mean, this has been a bloodbath this year.
Yeah.
So he says Google's products require trust and investment, and that's exactly
right.
What you're not getting right now. You're getting a kind of a ruthless picture of Google that, you know, it survives or it dies, and it does that quickly.
This, to me, is likely to be a classic problem of overly focusing on the measurable. So they can see how much it costs to run Google Plus and Inbox.
They're very data driven, aren't
right.
they?
But the unmeasurables are how millions of people feel about Google. How much trust is out there? You can't measure that. I mean, you can do a survey or whatever, but you can't really measure what's going on in the minds of developers coming out of the universities and thinking, well, which platform should I embrace? Should it be Google's or some competitor? And you can't measure some student who's going to grow up and like write the alternative to Google search and just crush Google, which that person could have been a Google evangelist, but they've like, you know, you can't measure any of that stuff. And so that's why you need a visionary founder. I mean, for example, Google Plus was the stuff of visionary founders. The reason there were the Hangouts allowed you to talk to 10 people simultaneously is because the individual person of Larry Page says, I want 10. And they're like,
right.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes.
And that's why Apple used to be great, because Steve Jobs didn't like the color blue on their Mac. And they said, yes, we'll change it by tomorrow or whatever it was. And you need that kind of visionary founder who has a gut feel for the zeitgeist of the community and gives them what they want. Right now, it seems like Google management is run by bean counters and, you know.
I would say this is an existential threat to Google because with people like Elizabeth Warren, and now I think there's a drumbeat, let's say, break up Google.
Yeah.
There's nobody, there aren't fans to say no.
Right.
There's nobody who says, oh, no, we got to save this. Ron makes the point that a lot of people had made, that this is a structural problem with the way Google works. He says Google's strategy of having multiple teams throw things against the wall to see what sticks leads to lots and lots of products and services launching all the time, all with varying levels of quality, integration with other Google products, and varying lifetimes. It also leads to lots and lots of product cancellations. Google's in love with creating new stuff. They're not in love with maintaining existing stuff. Right. That's always been the rap.
Now,
question for you guys. What if Google was just strictly search? Nothing to do with Android phones or anything like that. What if they were just strictly search? Would they still be the healthy, strong company that they are today?
I don't know. I mean, to a certain extent, and this is not exactly to your question, but that's what Google Plus was, actually. I've made the case
that it was social search.
It was a search engine for YouTube. It was a search engine for all social content. It was a search engine for news. It was a search engine for everything. Everything was based on search. So if I followed Ant Pruitt on Google Plus, that was just a search for his name.
It was a saved search.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
And so, and because everything was integrated into Google Plus, they basically took the whole world and put it into a search engine. And they themselves said, all the top brass involved with Google Plus said, this is not the future of social. This is the future of Google. And they implied that in the future, there would just be Google Plus, and that would be your everything. And it would basically be a search engine where you can post directly to the search engine. So that doesn't answer your question. To answer your question, I mean, I think they would be successful as a search company, but they wouldn't have the power that they do. I mean,
which is kind of the point,
right,
for people like Elizabeth Warren.
Yep.
Search plus ad sales. Search plus ads, right. But they go together.
Yep.
They don't. The reason they created Android is because they wanted people to be using Google in many, many ways.
Yeah.
They wanted a billion phones in a billion pockets.
Right.
So it just expanded their reach for ads and search.
Yeah.
But I don't think they should own YouTube. I don't think they should be doing social stuff. I think they should be they would be just as dominant if all they did was search, wouldn't they? They'd still be the number one search engine.
I think they'd be just as dominant in search. But I mean, YouTube gives them enormous reach and power.
And troubles.
Yes.
In fact, later on, we'll see the kinds of troubles, and they're not handling them well.
Yeah.
And I don't like it, and the EU doesn't like it, because Google, whether you believe it or not, is tempted to raise the search results of its own products, right?
Yep.
The EU dinged them for shopping. YouTube's not far behind. If you search for anything, there's a YouTube video at the top of the page for it.
Yeah.
Now, maybe Google says, well, that's what users want, but it doesn't look, I don't think it's seemly.
Yeah.
And in fact, Larry Page, when he wrote the first paper and delivered the first paper about Google, was very clear. He said we shouldn't have any advertising, because whether you mean to or not, the selling of advertising will taint the search results. Yep. And acquiring all these other side products has mm-hmm. absolutely done that. So I think I'm not sure I'd say you should break up Google. I don't know if that's the right answer. But if Google were just a search plus advertising company, their revenue would be cut a little bit, although the vast majority of their revenue is from search. But more importantly, I think they'd be a better search engine, a more trustworthy search engine.
Yep.
Well, that's the thing. You look at some people are really good at doing one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it sort of diminishes their credibility when they start dabbling into other things and multitasking. And, you know, I guess it sort of depends on the case and depends on the person. But I just thought about that. What if they only worried about search and the actual ad space that they sell in search? Because everybody uses Google to look up stuff. Sorry, Bing. Not everybody uses you.
Interestingly, now with Google Stadia, which they've announced but not launched, I mean, that's the thing that now that I remember that Lisa said, well, I'm not going to spend any energy on Google Stadia because it's just going to be killed in six months or whatever. And I bet you that's a very – yeah. that's got to be a kind of and really the people that Stadia has to win over first are developers, game developers. Right. Do you think game developers are thinking, oh, yeah, this is going to be a great opportunity – Google's going all in on streaming gaming. No, they're going to go to a Sony. They're going to go to Microsoft. They're going to go to people who game and don't kill every product they invent.
Absolutely. And people think that gaming is frivolous. Yeah, people think gaming is frivolous. No, but if you're a developer,
it's everything.
It's a lifetime commitment to become a developer for a specific platform because it takes years, especially with more sophisticated gaming and VR coming online. It's a major – I mean, I can switch email.
I'm going to make a weird prediction. We'll see if I'm right. I bet Stadia never launches.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Because it's a non-starter.
Well, actually, there were previous game initiatives that they never launched. They said they were going to launch one around Google Plus. Yeah. They announced it at Google I.O., and they're like, oh, we're going to have this whole thing, and it's going to be the Play Store and Google Plus is where everything's going to happen, and you're going to watch the games. And they even mentioned that, like, you know, gaming's become a spectator sport, so everybody wants to watch it and blah, blah, blah. And everybody got excited. Everybody forgot about it, and then they never launched it.
All Google did with the Stadia announcement is provide a nice fat target for Microsoft, Sony, and Amazon to aim at E3. Right. And you're going to see all three of them respond with more games, more exclusives, better thought out plans, and I bet you Stadia never launches.
And just eat Google's lunch. Yeah.
Yep. It's just not going to launch. No developer's going to write a game for it. And Apple, well, let's not forget Apple Arcade. A billion phones, a billion. They're in a billion pockets, y'all, as Oprah said. How many pockets is Google Stadia in? You have an Android TV device, right? Yep. No,
I'm the only person that does. That's
I have a Shield. Guess what? You know what's on the Shield? GeForce Now. It does the same thing now.
Yeah.
Stadia. This has come to me now that Stadia. I was all excited. I watching the Stadia. You know, I get this. We all do this reality distortion feel at these keynotes. We go, this looks great. This is all. Stadia will never launch. And if it does, it'll be killed almost instantly. Because
I wasn't excited because I think about bandwidth.
Right.
I'm here in the South where there's a lot of rural areas. I can't even say that word. I'm so country.
And people say rural juror.
And by country, he means drunk because he's been drinking.
And people's internet is just not going to be fast enough, in my opinion.
They were talking about, we're going to have all these great servers, 10 teraflops, blah, blah, blah. They didn't mention that frayed line going from their fancy, shiny servers to my house.
In those multiplayer games that they were demoing, latency is the only thing. I mean, it's everything. Yeah. You can't have a tenth of a second delay. It's fatal.
Write this down. I predict it will never launch.
All right.
That's my prediction for the week. I'm terrible at predictions. I'm always wrong. So, in fact, I'm guaranteeing it'll launch by saying that. Aunt Pruitt is here. He is always welcome on this show. Bring your whiskey. Bring your aunts. Aunt Pruitt from Tech Republic and many other places. Love having you on the show. Thank you for being here. Mike Elgin, who spends more money on airplane tickets than he does on anything else.
Yes.
He's back in town after a hugely successful gastronomad tour of Mexico City. What's next?
It was fantastic. We're doing 2-week experience in Morocco. So we're going to do
Fez?
We're going to do Fez, Marrakesh. We're going to go into the Sahara. We're going to Essaouira, which is a beach town. We're going to the Chef Chaouen, Blue Village of Chef Chaouen.
I actually love Morocco. We were in Tangier a couple of months ago, and Lisa and I both fell in love with it. It's beautiful
country. So Tangier is, of course, a very unique city, but there are elements of it that are very like universally Moroccan. It's such a cool country. It's just such a beautiful country.
And the food, the desert, the architecture.
Yeah.
The history of Morocco is fascinating.
It really is. And so we're going to spend a lot
of time. Not Arab originally, Berber.
Berber, right. There are lots and lots of Berber tribes. The Berber people in general in Mexico, in Morocco that I've met are just like the most wonderful people you'll ever meet. I mean, Moroccans in general are very friendly.
Very warm.
Berbers are they're very cool people. And so we're going to be doing that shortly. And we're leaving Sunday to go back to Morocco to finish the preparation of it.
But the only reason you ever come on this show is because you have a grandchild in the South Bay.
That's
I know the truth. I know the real truth.
This is true. This is true.
He has to come see his granddaughter, which is our blessing. Glad to have you. Elgin.com. And, of course, is there room? Nope, sold out.
Sold. Morocco sold out. The next Prosecco sold out. But after that, Prosecco Provence, another Mexico City experience.
I'm just thrilled to see sold out. To me, I'm happy for you. That's
well, it's
really
getting
great.
To the point where people love them so much. Yeah, I'm guessing that in a couple of years, 100% of the people who do these experiences will be repeats.
It kind of that's what happened with Geek Cruises. I used to do those Geek Cruises, and over about 5 or 10 years, it pretty much was the same people every single time because it's so much fun.
Right.
Once you do it once, you go, oh, that's my vacation next year. That's my vacation.
It's a community.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a community.
I also want to give you this quickly. This is This is Mexico's best coffee.
So it's a wooden box.
Yes.
Man. Okay.
This is
their coffee comes in a box.
Yes.
And
a bag. This shows the Macuca Cafe. This is one of the cafes owned by our friend Ricardo. But it's actually, we got it at Barola Cafe. So if you're ever in Mexico City, go to Barola Cafe. It's the best cup of coffee you'll ever. So this coffee grows in a specific mountainside in southern Mexico. And if you try to grow it anywhere else, it does not taste anything like this.
Nice.
But this is like, will blow your mind. This is like such great coffee.
And it's an espresso roast because you know that's what I do.
Yep.
And I can't wait. And I'm going to put this in my I just got a new Breville coffee maker, an updated coffee maker. So.
Wonderful.
With the burr grinder and everything. So I'm. Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Taste
that is
of
great.
Mexico.
Taste of Mexico. And all you got was a couple of fingers at McAllen. But that's.
I'll take it.
That's how it works here at Twig. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. It is literally, I'm getting a new computer. I mentioned tomorrow. First thing I'll install, LastPass. First thing I saw on any new phone, LastPass. LastPass is my password manager. And the reason I used LastPass, started using it 10 years ago, is it was clear that I had to remember too many passwords. The temptation, and I think when I started using LastPass, I was falling prey to this, was to use the same password or a slight variation of that everywhere. We now know that is a horrific security practice because if one site gets breached, the bad guys now have your password and they just try it on every other site. You can't reuse passwords. You shouldn't have passwords you can remember. Because if it's easy to remember, it's easy to break. It's easy to guess. So what LastPass does is it generates long, strong, completely impossible to memorize passwords. You get to provide all the, parameters. Is it got punctuation? They even have a couple of nice things like they don't put ambiguous characters in if you say, so I can't have an O and a zero, which is great. Makes it much easier for me to read them. But the best part is I don't ever have to really type them or read them. Because LastPass also fills in those passwords everywhere I go. And not just websites, but on iOS and Android, on apps too. So that's why it's the first thing I install. I install that, and then as I install apps, it's a simple thing. Just boom, 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 because the passwords get filled in by LastPass.
I have no idea what any of my passwords are.
You shouldn't.
And I don't care.
Honestly, if you do, that's a bad sign. Well, there's one you need to know, which is your LastPass password. But
I know maybe two passwords.
Yeah.
And after that, I have no idea.
You should
know.
And
it's all good.
And this is doubly true in business. Now, I'm a LastPass premium user for years. Actually, when I got married, we got LastPass Family. Made it easy for me to share passwords with Lisa. But also, she's my designated LastPass survivor. And that's important because people often become disabled or pass on without passing on their passwords. So if anything should happen to me, Lisa will get access to my passwords. They send you an email. You say, if I don't respond to that email in a period of time, then you can give Lisa the passwords.
Right.
And that's really a great feature of LastPass families. There's also LastPass for teams. If you have a small business, 50 or fewer, we use LastPass Enterprise. And in fact, we're not alone. 43,000 businesses use LastPass. It's literally the number one most preferred password manager. The reason businesses use it, well, because everything bad that you could do with passwords, your employees are doing and more. Things you never even thought of. Putting your passwords on Post-it notes right there on the screen. We know that more than half of all employees share passwords, and not just with other employees, with other people in the world. With LastPass Enterprise, for instance, our business department doesn't even have the passwords to get into our bank account. They can get in, but they never see that password. That means they can't share it. They can't copy it down. I can change it anytime. They still can get in, but they can't get the password. We have folders, so all the people in the dev team, the ops team, the business team have shared passwords, so they all have access to it. There are over 100 policies in LastPass Enterprise, things like how strong the master password is. We require second-factor authentication as well. And boy, they support everything. I use a YubiKey for my last password. I feel really safe with that. They support Duo Security, but also Google Authenticator. In fact, LastPass has its own authenticator. I really like that because you don't have to type any letters. It just says approve or deny. And so that's easy for employees. It's free to use. LastPass is really the solution that you need for your business. That you don't want to be on that headline, big breach affects Twit. No, I don't want that headline. So protect yourself with LastPass. LastPass.com/Twit. 13.5 million people use LastPass. I've used it for more than a decade since they first started. Steve Gibson, a few years ago, I said, Steve, meet Joe Segrist, the creator of LastPass. Talk to him. Look at his source code. See how he does it. Steve was very impressed. He uses LastPass. That's a good sign. Our security guy uses LastPass. Yeah, Russell has set up LastPass for the whole enterprise. Yeah. LastPass.com/Twit. Encrypted everywhere. Only decrypted on your device. So LastPass can't even see your passwords. No one can see them except you. I can go on and on and on, but really, this bottom line is you need LastPass. You need it for yourself. You need it for your business. LastPass.com/Twit. Go there. Find out how they can help you. And please use that URL, because as much as we appreciate LastPass support, it's nice if they know you heard it here. LastPass.com/Twit. Thank you, LastPass, for doing such a great job. All right, enough.
For the record, Jason Howell got me on LastPass.
Did he? Good. Mm-hmm. It's easy, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It's for people who hate passwords, not who people who love them. It's like for people who never want to deal with it again.
And I use one of the things LastPass also does with the enterprise version is you can have it so that when you log into the enterprise version, it also logs into your personal version. So one login and all my passwords are there. And when I save a password, it saves it to the personal, but it's available no matter where I am. So that's great.
And still keeps them separate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It completely separates them. Nobody else. Yeah. But it's simple because I only had one password to remember. All right. So we can. I think I'm out of whiskey. So no. The wake is over.
It's time to live again.
Time to live again. And Google Fi continues. Thank goodness. That's Google's MVNO, which I really like. I use it on a Pixel 3. Can't use it on. Really sensibly, can't use it on anything else. Yeah. You wrote an article, which I haven't read yet, and I'm very interested to hear you say why you should use Google Fi but not mobile data.
Yes. So this is actually began with a conversation I had with Jason. I think he was hosting something. You were out of the country, and Jason was hosting. It might have been the show, actually.
Probably was, yeah.
And I think it was before the show. I mentioned to him that when I'm in the U.S., I just turn off data. And I end up having phone calls and texts plus the ability to use Wi-Fi when I'm on Wi-Fi.
And nowadays you're always near Wi-Fi, right? But what about when you're out in the car? What do you do?
Well, so this is the thing. So we have multiple problems. One is we all are cheapskates and want to hang on to as much of our money as possible. Right. That's a sensible thing.
Yes.
So when I don't use data on Google Fi, it costs $20 a month. For my phone bill.
Just phone, because it's voice and text for
voice
20
bucks.
Voice and text. 10 bucks a gigabyte for data.
Exactly. But if I don't use data, you don't pay any of that. And it's a very inexpensive way. And in fact, if you never turn on, the point I make in this column is if you never turn on data on a Google Fi phone, you save about as much money as you need to buy a new Pixel phone every year. So it's a free phone if you don't use data.
The average smartphone user, you're right, touches her phone 2,617 right. times a day.
So this is the other problem it solves. We all have this problem of overuse and phone addiction, social media addiction. And if you don't have a connection to social or to the internet when you're out and about socializing with people.
Oh, you pay attention.
You pay attention, but you can still get calls and texts. So if there's an emergency,
yeah,
you still
you're
get
not
it.
Disconnected.
Right.
And you just can't tweet.
Right. So you can be an addicted
How am I supposed to play Pokemon Go?
Exactly, Leo. It's time to give up these addictive ways.
You're right. You know, and I think that all the time, especially when I catch myself driving and playing Pokemon Go.
Yes.
That's when I
right.
think, this is going to kill me.
Yeah.
This game is actually going to kill me.
Yikes. Yes. The Grim Reaper is going to catch you.
So you say go into your settings on whatever phone you use and turn off mobile data.
Turn off mobile data. And then
wow,
if you really need mobile data for some reason, you really want to play Pokemon Go, you turn it on. But the point is that make it more difficult to be constantly glued to your screen. I mean, I've been observing this phenomenon for years and also looking at the numbers about how much.
Okay, see that button? I'm going to press it.
That's it.
Mobile data is gone. I just turn it off.
Well, you're still on Wi-Fi here in the Twitch studio.
Yeah, so I have data now.
You have data now. But
as soon as I get in the car.
When you're in a restaurant or when you're in the car or whatever, you won't be connected
heresy,
to the internet.
But like, you know what? I think that's actually really smart.
I think this is a sane, simple, trivially simple way for us to like hold the line against smartphone addiction. And
again,
really the problem gets worse every year.
Mirror. You know, I looked at myself in the mirror probably about 2 years ago and noticed that I was just totally addicted. Because, I mean, I love technology, so I was always reading my phone, reading articles about technology and this and that and answering notifications and just totally stressing myself out for no reason at all.
Right.
And now it is.
You do this too?
Oh, I was
too.
Bad about it. But now I still have all of my data and stuff connected. But there are a lot of times where my phone is in another room somewhere and I have no idea.
No,
and I get a lot of angry voicemails and texts and stuff from the missus. Like, why aren't you answering?
People expect you to be always available, don't they? Isn't that funny?
But this is the thing. You can always be available by phone or text, which are non-addictive communications
right.
media.
All right, I'm doing it on my other phone. I'm so bad, I have multiple phones I have to turn on.
Yeah.
Cellular data.
It's okay. You don't have
off.
A problem, Leo. You're a professional.
I'm a trained professional. Do not try this at home. Wow. I also have to find my Pokemon Go ball and turn that off.
Yeah, turn that off, yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm going to be shaking in a minute. No, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
What a simple thing.
It's so simple. And again, if you have a Google Fi phone, $20 a month is a pretty small
They're
mobile
practically
bill.
Giving it away.
I mean, it's like, it's a free phone every year. So
I'm going to be paying $90 a month for T-Mobile no matter what. For Verizon, $90 a month no matter what.
Right.
But my Google Fi phone, it's just
$20.
Yeah.
So something to be said about that. Yeah.
And you could turn it on for maps.
Well, this is the other part of it that I wanted to highlight in this article. We're having something that nobody has really mentioned or commented upon, which is an offline revolution. So Google just recently announced offline voice dictation.
That's
which
right.
Is
Gboard.
Brilliant.
Gboard will dictate.
Right.
Even if you don't online.
Exactly. Offline maps for Google works exactly as good as online maps.
And in fact, if you haven't looked lately, Google Maps will automatically download your neighborhood.
That's right.
It probably already has it.
Right. I use offline maps all over the world. It's fantastic. And the only downside is that Google Offline does not support walking directions. So I recommend an app called Maps.me.
Maps.me.
Which has way better walking directions than Google, and it's totally offline. There are all kinds of things that are offline. So you can take pictures. You can make and receive phone calls and texts.
You just can't post pictures to Instagram until you get home.
Exactly.
But you can do it when you get home.
This is a healthier thing to wait for that process.
Oh, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to Hawaii. I'm going to do it on vacation just to see if I could survive.
When you're in Hawaii, you're in paradise.
I should enjoy Hawaii.
You will survive in paradise.
Pokemon Go looks the same in Hawaii as it does here. There's no reason.
Have a little shirt, like a Hawaiian shirt?
All the characters. Wow.
Oh, my.
I like this. And it's basically a free phone every year.
That's right. Yeah. Make Google buy your phone.
It won't. I'd have to get a new plan on T-Mobile and Verizon.
Yes.
unfortunately.
I know someone that's on Google Fi, and they seem to complain about their monthly bill as far as it being fluctuating all the time, and they couldn't quite figure out the math on it.
Well, when when I was just leaving data on, I would blow past the 6 gigabyte. After 6 gigabytes, they pay for it, and at 15 gigs, they throttle it. And I was at 15 gigs, like, you know, 5 days in to the month.
Right.
And
right.
So nowadays, I really slow it down. There's some cases when I do turn on data, but I try to keep my bill under, you know, $40 a month if I can. And
this is actually brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's not some, I mean, saving money is one thing, but really saving your life is the real reason.
Right. Pay attention to the world when you're out
mental
and about,
health.
You know?
Okay, I'm going to try it.
You can do this, Leah.
I have a strong hunch that you'll be just fine in Hawaii without your phone,
sir. I guess
sir.
You're right.
As Jerome Lanier likes to say, reality is so high definition.
It is. It's almost perfect.
It's amazing.
low latency. You could actually see the rust. Low it's incredible. Latency. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it. Oh, you are really challenging. Meanwhile, if you're in China, you don't have to worry because Google's going to block any advertisements for sites that help bypass censorship. Yep. This is the slippery slope that Apple's gone down and now Google's going down with authoritarian regimes. Yep. If you want to do business, and China's a big country, you're going to end up... I didn't realize Google did any business in China, but I guess the advertisements it makes money on, right?
Yeah. This... So one way that I look at this story is it's part of the things that people complain about but don't do anything about it. So nobody, you know, the reason Google can help authoritarian regimes crack down and essentially violate their human right to access to information, which is Article 19, I believe, of the Human Rights Convention, is because nobody cares. Like, you know, people in the U.S. and Europe and elsewhere, if they're helping China become this Orwellian high-tech dictatorship, people are like, yeah, whatever, at least I get, you know, good search. And so I think that's one perspective on this. The other one is wrapped up in their project, their controversial project. What is it called, Leo, where they were going to do a search
Chinese engine? Search engine?
Right. I mean, when Google was in China, they did censor search. You remember you'd do a search for Tiananmen Square in China and it'd show all these tourist photos of people taking snapshots. And then in the West, Tiananmen Square was like
people stay
rolling.
In front of tanks. Yeah.
And so
But they were very principled. And when China went one step too far, they said, all right, that's it. We're out.
Yeah, that's right.
Now they want to go back with this Dragonfly, which is a search engine for China. Now, Google has said again and again, that's dead. We're not doing it. The Intercept keeps saying no.
Yep.
They're still working on it. In fact, the latest from The Intercept, Google's conducting a secret performance review of its censored China project.
Yeah.
So a small group of top managers at Google are still working on Project Dragonfly.
And, you know, it's hard to gauge how seriously to take
I don't know if I trust The Intercept in this.
My guess is that giant companies that are multi-billion-dollar companies, $100 billion companies and above, who have their fingers in a lot of honeypots, so to speak, have to have lots of stuff in the wings ready to go.
Right.
So
they're always working on stuff.
That's
doesn't mean anything. We know that. We just talked about it for an hour.
Right. Exactly. So whether Google says, okay, we have no plans to do this, but that doesn't mean they don't have a group
might
of
be
people
working
looking
on
at it.
Right.
They're
right.
Probably looking at all kinds of things. So.
Right.
It's hard to say how much to invest in these Intercept reports. It's still good to know that this stuff is going on.
You've been to Cuba.
Yes.
And I remember you telling me when you were in Cuba that there is this kind of sneaker net internet.
Yeah.
Underground of USB keys with internet content on it.
That's right. And they spread like wildfire and you subscribe to these. And
so it's actually a business. You subscribe. You'll get every week. You'll get a new USB key.
I don't remember the frequency, but it's every week, every couple of weeks, every month, something like that.
What's on there? Like Facebook?
It's a bunch of Netflix movies. Content from all the social networks. It's a mishmash of popular things that are happening on the public internet. Because when I was there a year and a half ago or whenever it was, you could only access the internet from a sidewalk. You'd have to go up to
Nobody had it in their house?
No, nobody had it in their house. Huh. Then they rolled it out. If you were a Communist Party-like person in good standing, then you could get it in your house. And they're slowly expanding it.
Is that an infrastructure issue? They just don't have the internet?
No, it's a government. Political. Yeah, they don't.
Because they were just locked down.
Yeah, when you would go to one of these sidewalk locations, of which they had, I don't know, 50 in the whole country, you'd have to get in line, and there'd be like a little trailer, and you pay, and they take your passport, copy it. They know exactly who exactly is looking at exactly what.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I went in 2008 into Cuba, and they had these cyber cafes that were really expensive, and they literally had a uniformed police officer looking at your screen while you're using the internet. Jeez. In 2008. The most interesting, and I think that's why it's relevant to this show, is that Google is the company in best standing with the Cuban government. And I've been to Google has this showcase room at an art gallery just in Havana, outside of Havana. It's near Havana. And you go there, and they have Google cardboard, and they have Chromebooks, and they have all this stuff. And it's
in a country with no internet. Google doesn't have much of a future.
They have one cable that goes to Venezuela, of all places. Oh, so boy. That's not a good place to connect your country. But this was the fastest internet in the country, easily. And there was a long line of people who just wanted to sit down and use a Chromebook at high speed.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And so, what's happening now is. So a couple of things with these stories that we're talking about here is Google is in such good standing with the Cuban government, and the Trump administration is not. Google has become kind of an ambassador to the Cuban government and on go-between the government of the U.S. and Cuba. And also they're trying to work with Cuba to do another undersea cable, because there's probably 20 cable. I'm making this number up, but there's a bunch of cables that just go around Cuba.
Right.
Because they're crisscrossing the oceans in every direction,
right.
And Cuba's not getting any. And Google would like to connect them with a really fat pipe from, like, Miami or something. And so that Cubans have, if they want, fastest internet as they want to. And so this is something that is a possibility. It's in the works. But again, as we mentioned before, it's kind of a political threat for the Cuban people to have free access and fast access and low-cost access to information. So there you go.
This is the submarine cable map from Telegeography. And if I zoom in on the Caribbean, you see Cuba, and you see all the cables going. Wow. This is Cuba right here. You see all the cables going around.
It looks like a wind tunnel where the air goes around.
Wow. And they've got one little janky line to Jamaica, and then, as you said, another one to Venezuela. And I don't know where this green one goes, but even the Dominican Republic and Haiti are better connected.
Yeah,
Puerto Rico, of course.
Yeah.
In fact, the Bahamas are trying really hard to become a data haven. They want a high-speed internet to the Bahamas because they'd like NASA. In the early days, the Bahamas were a pirate haven.
Yes.
Now they want to be a data haven. I remember when we were in the Bahamas
pirate haven,
talking to their minister of information, who said, yeah, we want to make NASA be the place you go for, things like BitTorrent but Cuba, big island, not a lot of connection.
Yep. And so it's a real sore subject because, of course, the Cuban people know what's happening in the world.
They're not ignorant of this. They want this.
Yeah. We were having dinner with some friends in Cuba that we had just met, and they said, how are those fires in Santa Barbara? And so I was from Santa Barbara. And
They
knew about it because there's another business where somebody will come into an apartment building, illegally set up satellite dishes.
Wow.
And they literally run wires down the halls.
Oh, my.
And into the front doors of people to get satellite TV. And it's a cat and mouse game. So what I was told was it cost them about $900 to install the satellite dish. And if they can keep it running for 3 months, they recoup the $900, and then it's profit after that. But they're sometimes shut down sooner than 3 months. Sometimes
it's still
it takes
risky.
Them 4 months or five months. But they always get shut down at some point. And so I just thought that was fascinating. But they get set, and what they get is Univision. So they get the Spanish language channel from the U.S., and they can watch the news on
Sábado Gigantico.
Exactly.
Prima Impacto. Oh, I used to watch that.
Did you? Do you speak Spanish?
Heck no, but I used to like watching Jackie Garrido, Weather Girl.
Oh, you watched? Wow.
I'm such a pig.
Wow. That's pretty funny. I think Sabado Gigante goes over, right? He retired.
No idea.
Yeah. Anyway, it was fun.
Yep. While it lasted.
While it lasted. NASA and Google are also partnering, but not for Cuban undersea cables, but for Mars exploration.
Yep. There's a part of the Antarctica that is very Mars-like, and so Google's doing a big mapping project with NASA.
Neat.
And so now you have street view for what they call the, I think, Earth's Mars or something like that. It's basically
Devon Island. You need to do this on Chrome.
Yeah.
In Google Earth, but you can do this travel through the. I guess it's not happening here.
Google Earth is so amazing.
Probably because I'm running something that's blocking it. Let's see.
How about they fix it to where I don't almost miss my appointment today because it took me to a back street.
Is that why you were late? Is that what happened? Play the drums. Do you know where that is? Did Karsten leave you the keys?
The Google change log.
Karsten is on vacation. He's in Montana, but I think he left Kevin the keys to the change
log. It's like a change log lever that he has to throw.
There's a red cover over it. He has to throw the cover open and then flip the switch.
Two guys have to turn keys.
Yeah, two guys have to turn keys at opposite ends of the console. Google Podcasts in-episode search is coming for podcasters like us. This is fantastic. Shows are being fully transcribed. That means you'll be able to search for stuff like you could say, what was that whiskey that Aunt Pruitt was drinking? Yeah. And you can search for Aunt Pruitt and whiskey and go right to that part of the episode.
There might be a lot of content on that search.
You might find many results.
Yeah. That is awesome.
I really love the future of podcasting in this regard. I don't like the invasion by all the public radio people who don't get podcasting.
Yeah.
But I love the
idea of really good
guests. Yeah. But I love the metrics because, you know, I listen to so many podcasts, Leo, that are just there's great stuff, but I also get so mad that I just 3 minutes in and I'm done. I'll go to the next one.
Oh, I do that all the time.
And I want them to know it because it's like, they don't understand, you know, they do things that really bug me and I want to protest by stopping listening. And I want them to know that I stopped listening at that point. So they know what is bothering people.
People who stop listening to my shows invariably send me a big email saying why I'm not listening to This Week in Google anymore.
Well, you're on a different level. You're going to get emails.
I get those every day.
Yeah, but it's like. Can I mention other podcast networks? Is that
please,
okay? Okay,
of course.
So Slate is they have some good podcasts, but they're like they do stuff like they do this bait and switch where like you subscribe to the Culture Gap Fest,
yeah,
and they'll just play the spoiler special. I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah.
And then now every fourth Trump cast is you have to pay for it. So it's like they tease it, and they're like, well, if you sign up for Slate Plus, then blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you guys don't get podcasting. That's not what it's all about. If you can't make it on advertising, go back to radio.
Yeah, yeah.
But isn't that how radio survives off is advertising?
Oh yeah,
yes.
Well, we survive on advertising.
Be able to translate it over to the podcast.
But yeah. On radio, they don't say, "Well, you can't listen to this radio program because you didn't pay."
Every fourth program,
they just do the ad.
Yeah,
and then everybody gets it for free. So,
well, you know who else is peeved? You're not going to be able to hear transcripts of BBC podcasts on your Google Podcast because they're pulling out.
Is there a trend toward everything going to apps? Because that's terrible.
Like, I agree. It's not what podcasting.
I'm not going to listen to the BBC app.
Google BBC wants you to use the BBC Sounds app.
Not going
to
happen.
And frankly, with Spotify buying Gimlet and Anchor, I have a feeling that Spotify's plan is to do something similar.
Yep.
They have a free tier, but you'd still have to use the Spotify app. And I'll tell you what's driving a lot of that is advertisers who say we need metrics. When we buy a banner ad, we know who sees it and who clicks on it.
Right.
Why don't we know that with a podcast? It's digital, isn't it? It's of course with a, you know, you buy a Super Bowl ad, you don't know if anybody saw it.
Right.
They could all have been going to the bathroom during your ad, but you don't complain about that.
To me, the whole point of podcasting is that I can be like, I can go on a long hike and I can just say go, and it just plays one after the other. Yeah. And if, you know, and if I'm not going to be like, I'm going to be a BBC podcast consumer now. I'm going to switch over to this other app. It's never going to happen. I'm never even going to download that app. It's I just hate this trend.
Well, how about buying stuff from Walmart on your Google Assistant? So this is something I do all the time on Amazon's Echo with Amazon. And it says, you know, when I run out of batteries, I say, you know, Echo, buy some Type-C batteries. And she'll say, well, the last time you bought batteries, you bought these. Yep. You want to order these again? And I say, yes. Mm-hmm. What's your special code? I enter the, I say,
you make it sound dirty.
Hi, what's your 4-digit code? 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, I love it when you say that. You've just bought batteries.
Talk nerdy to me.
talk nerdy to me, Leo. So
okay, well,
I actually love that feature.
Have you considered Google Home then?
But Google, this is where Google was a little bit behind Amazon. So doing a deal with Walmart, this is Walmart kind of is afraid of Amazon. So naturally, they're going to do a deal. You could say, Google, talk to Walmart. I don't like it that I have to say that first.
Right.
They are going to use prior purchases, same way that Amazon does.
Yep.
So they've been in partnership for a couple of years, but this is now going to be active on your Google Assistant.
I really support this, Leo, because my book is also available on Walmart.
nice.
But seriously, this is kind of a weak, half-assed, and there's no other response to Amazon's just total dominance of online commerce.
But even Amazon says not that many people use voice to buy stuff. It's not a huge market. I guess it's a coming market.
It's the big picture with Amazon is just that they're a much more massive company that's in much more involved in people's lives than the public even realizes, you know. And so the Amazon Echo really made the smart speaker market what it is today. And Google Home is like catching up fast. It's growing faster than Amazon Echo, I believe, still. But the idea that like, okay, I'm a Prime member. Once you're a Prime member, you're like, okay, well, I should also shop at Whole Foods then. And I should get an Amazon Echo instead of a Google Home. And I should do this, that, and the other thing. And so there's this kind of sense of like Amazon doesn't feel like a all-encompassing platform, but it kind of is. And it's problematic, regardless of whether today purchases are made. I think in the future, there's going to be a lot more purchasing because we're just going to be chit-chatting with our agents, whatever they are, all day, all the time. And buying stuff is just going to be another use case for that technology.
Well, two things. I disagree. I'm an Amazon Prime person, but I don't see myself falling into the Amazon ecosystem and just wanting to get a whatever the little device is called or whatever their smart devices are. I don't care anything about it. All I care about is how much is my Prime subscription each year and how soon are my packages going to get here because I order stuff so frequently. And it's not necessarily ordering Amazon branded stuff either. You know, it's just
half your purchases are not from Amazon, even on
Amazon. You know, so I can care less about the brand of Amazon or the ecosystem of them. Yeah. And number two, I give Walmart credit for saying, you know what, we got to at least make an effort at it. Because at one time, Walmart was like Amazon, far as just being where everybody went, regardless of how much money you made, or
how much people hated Walmart and all the talk about Walmart not paying its employees well enough, and nobody worries about that anymore.
We're rooting
for them to beat Amazon.
Right. Finally, a good old fashioned brick and mortar store, mom and pop, and
wouldn't it be nice to have John Legend respond when you try to buy stuff from Walmart? Now you can. All you have to do is tell your Google Assistant, talk like a legend. Here, let's.
Oh, my gosh.
Levels are set. You ready to rock and roll?
I'm your Google Assistant. I can help you find answers and have fun. The forecast is 72 and sunny.
Can I just say something? Why John Legend? He doesn't have that distinctive a voice.
Yeah.
If you had Gilbert Gottfried, then you'd know that it was
shouting at you.
But honestly, I mean, I like John Legend. He's a great singer, but is his voice that distinctive that you'd go, oh, John Legend? Yeah. I don't think I'd know.
No, it sounds like a voice that's coming through some tiny speakers. That's
I want Aunt Pruitt on my Google Home. Yeah. Hey, yeah, with
something.
Hey, talk like an ant.
Okay, here's one of my favorite songs. Happy birthday.
Now that's cool.
Whose birthday it is?
That's cool.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm feeling this new voice. You can find me on all kinds of devices. Phones, Google Homes, and if I'm lucky, in your heart.
The Google Assistant now featuring the voice.
They're so cute.
To say, hey, Google, talk like a legend. They talked about that at Google I.O. almost a year ago.
Yeah, last year, I thought.
Oh, wait a minute.
So one of your devices is responding.
Voice handles the rest. Okay. That's John Legend. It says, hi, John Legend. It worked.
Yep.
Or good.
Talk like a legend.
He's sleeping right now. He's taking.
It said, hi, John Legend here. I lent my voice to your Google Assistant because you. Hey, Google, tell me a joke. John Legend is apparently very quiet.
He doesn't know any jokes. He's a singer.
Oh, you know what happened? I turned data off.
Sorry, Leo. That didn't last long.
I want my data back.
No Wi-Fi at the studio? Come on.
Well, it's the little balls are bouncing. I don't know.
Give me Gilbert Gottfried.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Right.
So then, you want to buy those batteries?
That would be.
I would pay for that.
Let me tell you about batteries and a cat.
I did have TomTom used to do celebrity voices in their GPS. Remember that?
Elvis.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to go there. Turn left, buddy. Who was it? It was, it was so funny. First of all, GLaDOS from Portal.
Right.
But she would lie to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She would say turn left when you're supposed to turn right, which sounded very dangerous to the GPS saying turn left, but there's no. So that was a bad one.
Right.
And then I had, who's the guy in Easy Rider? Not
Shady
Jack.
Sam?
No, that would be funny. No, the guy in Easy Rider, the not Jack Nicholson, the other guy. Not
Peter Fonda.
Not Peter Fonda, the other guy.
Oh,
I can never remember his name. Isn't that funny? Anyway, he had this stoner voice. Dennis Hopper. He's going, why would anybody ever want to get here? him, that guy. Oh, man, that's a long way to go. Okay. It gets bad after a while. You change it right back.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with the default voice on these assistants.
Yeah. It seems like a good idea.
You can get Burt Reynolds for $12.95. Mr. T.
As you still can?
Yeah.
On a TomTom?
Yeah.
But who has a TomTom?
Nobody.
Waze you can get celebrity voices. In fact, I recorded my voice because anybody can do it.
Yeah.
And then I recorded, you sit down and says, okay, say turn left, turn right, say all the things.
Right.
And then you could bundle it up, and I put it somewhere. I forgot where I put it. It's somewhere. Right. If you search around for it, you can have me.
Sell that.
On your ways. I should sell that. Google I.O. dates have been announced, and there will be sessions on Stadia, if they don't cancel it before then. Right. Dark mode, Linux on Chrome OS, and more. Dark mode. What is it with dark mode?
I don't get it. It's a color scheme.
It's a color scheme. Why is that a feature of any OS?
It's
dark mode.
It does feel good on the eyes.
Yeah,
I
guess so.
I don't mind the feature. I just don't get the enthusiasm.
Google has posted the initial schedule, so if you'd like to start planning your I.O., we are going to send Jason Howell, Jeff Jarvis. We will be covering the Google I.O. keynotes. Google I.O. is coming to town May 7th. And so, actually, it's going to be a busy week because the day before Microsoft's Build Developers Conference, they've overlapped once again. So Paul and Mary Jo will be at Build on Monday. We'll do the keynote on Monday. Then Tuesday, it'll be Google I.O. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. I stopped going to Google I.O. when they stopped giving me free laptops. No, just kidding.
I know that was a nice feature.
Yeah, I remember the one. There was one Google I/O where they gave you a
ton of stuff.
It wasn't a Pixel Book, whatever they called it before that.
So
they give you a laptop. Yeah,
yeah.
They give you a phone, an Android phone, and they gave you two watches. Remember that? They gave you one of the Android.
But you're good. You turned them down.
I turned them all down. Yeah,
I really admire that.
Well, I actually gave it back and then bought one.
That's how it should be. That's how journalists should work.
Right.
Developers is fine, but journalists should not accept that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
What they won't give you, or maybe they will, the new Nest Hub Max, a 10-inch smart display with a camera, kind of like the Google Home Hub, but this isn't officially announced. It's just the Google Store accidentally posted it.
Right.
And, of course, everybody jumped on it.
I think the 10-inch will be a much better option than the current option.
Yeah. I like the Home Hub. I am a fan. First of all, it doesn't have a camera in it, so Lisa doesn't mind that it's sitting next to our bed.
Right.
It's a great digital frame.
Yep.
So it's I just set it to family and friends. It's tiny, but it's right there next to the bed. Yeah. And every once in a while, Lisa say, oh, I remember that, or where was that? And that's really fun. I like that. Yep.
But I thought it was supposed to be like a kitchen device, though.
You could put it in the kitchen. It's just a slideshow, and you could talk to it.
Bathroom.
But it's a very good kind of clock.
Yes.
Bedside clock, because when the lights go out, it dims very dark because I don't like any lights, and it makes it very dim. Mm-hmm. When the lights come on, you can ask it what's the weather. You could say good morning. It'll give you a whole morning rundown. You could set an alarm. I often will roll over, say, wake me up when it's – I say, hey, you know who, wake me up when it's 8:30, and it'll wake me up.
Right.
It nudges me gently.
I just remember seeing it in person and thinking my Pixel XL is bigger than this.
Oh, yeah, it's really small. Yeah. But it's cheap. It's, you know, it's not expensive. So remember at the Stadia announcement, Sundar Pichai first of all said, I don't play games. Good way to start a game announcement.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Then he
said,
we have the most played game of all time, which is the dinosaur game.
Yeah.
Google has a new one. It's got an offline Easter egg game that's like Flappy Bird, but instead of a bird, it's a cloud that you're trying to avoid getting punctured by sharp-billed birds. It's like the Dino game, but it's only on mobile. Don't go open up Chrome in your desktop browser. You've got to search for something that doesn't exist. Actually, I can do it. I turned off data. So
nothing exists.
I now have a game I can play. Yay! So turn off data on your phone, do a search, and you'll get this new little floating cloudy game.
Yes. Yeah, go to a site that doesn't exist, like Google Plus.
Oh, yeah. It exists, unfortunately.
They have a page that says...
Yeah, it says it doesn't exist. It has to be a site that doesn't even have a doesn't exist page. 404.
Interesting. Cloud, a good name. Oh,
what else is going on? Beta Android Q Beta 2 came out today. Yesterday, the March, or is it the April? I guess the April update for... Android. Mm-hmm. You probably won't get it until later unless you're on a Pixel. Anything else for our change log? You can now, for a long time, I've used a YubiKey to log into my Google stuff. But
this I have is CNET and hear the story.
Oh,
that
shut up, CNET.
Right
I
now.
Hate this. I have autoplay stopped on this and it still plays. I don't know. They figure out a way around it. So this is a YubiKey. So when I log into my Google account, I can put in the YubiKey and it will give me the second factor after I give it the password. But it only worked on Chrome for a long time, which is really annoying because I don't use Chrome.
Yeah.
And it would be now you can use Firefox and Microsoft's Edge with your secure login. So that's good. That's good news. Nothing more to say, but that's just good news. I wish it would work in Safari because that's mostly the problem is that on Apple, I don't use Chrome.
So one thing that I think is worth talking about is the YouTube. There's a consensus that YouTube radicalizes people. So if you are interested in, let's say...
save this for when we end the changelog. We're still in the changelog.
Oh, gotcha.
But save it because right after one, there's only one more thing in the changelog.
Okay.
Google Duplex, which is that weird voice that calls restaurants and makes reservations, is now available or going to be available on non-Pixel phones and iOS devices. They're slowly rolling out, so don't expect it right away, but it will be. And it also, it only works in certain areas, although apparently now it's up to 43 states.
Well, the same technology is used for the call screening on the Pixel 3.
I love that feature.
The call screening is awesome.
Yeah.
So if you see a call coming in from a robocaller, which is 90% of my calls.
And you, too, are an introvert who doesn't like to talk to people.
Yeah. You just press the button that says screen it.
Right.
And you don't have to answer it.
And then you can interact and say, well, you can tell the assistants to ask the person to tell me more.
Oh, that's when the duplex comes in, because you're giving them additional stuff that they don't already know.
You can kind of guide the conversation.
Oh, that's cool.
And listen to it. There's another tip that if you hit the, what is it? You hit the volume button. You can listen to the whole conversation, both sides of it, if you want to.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can read it, but you can also listen.
Doesn't the person on the other end know that you're feeding Google questions to ask? Say, okay, but who was Mike's best friend in fourth grade?
I've gotten calls from a lot of people who clearly never heard of Google Duplex, and they just assume it's some kind of high-tech voicemail
fancy.
They never heard of.
Oh, you have a fancy assistant.
Oh, and the other great thing about it is it sends you a transcript. So somebody contacted me. They had this whole conversation. They want to have a conversation. They gave me the email, and then I forgot it. And then I went into the app and retrieved the email from the transcript, which is really nice. So
one thing it won't tell you, though, is this has been a sponsored ad. This is trouble for Google. It's an illegal thing, but apparently, and this is according to a story in Reuters, some of the search results you get from your Google Assistant are paid results, which Assistant does not tell you. The FTC requires either a disclaimer saying it's a sponsored announcement or an ad or something like that. We're very careful, as you might know, to always, anytime something's sponsored, to say this is paid for.
Right.
But the Google Assistant will recommend home service providers without disclosing that the results come from a database mainly composed of companies that joined a Google marketing program, maybe because it's not entirely from a paid program. Reuters asked a number of attorneys. They all said if there's a financial commitment, you must disclose it. I guess Google's getting around it, saying, well, it's not like there's a direct relationship. These are people that joined a marketing plan, and it just happens that they're getting recommended. FTC does say, when, for instance, if you, and this, by the way, is widely flouted. If you're on Instagram and you post a picture of you and your Macallan's cask strength whiskey. And Macallan gave you a bottle or gave you a buck to do that, you're supposed to say ad or sponsored. So few people on Instagram do that now.
Yep. It's a real problem. But it raises the question, you know, search is very lucrative because of ads. And we're moving to a situation where we're going to be using assistants who just give us an answer.
It's a problem.
So where do you monetize? Like, where's the...
Right. And that's not... I mean, if it's going to say... there's ways to say, and now here's a sponsored result.
Yes.
There's ways to do it, but they're not doing it. The FTC, apparently, according to Reuters, Reuters did a Freedom of Information request and got information that said the FTC has not received any complaints about this. So, because you would, who's going to complain? You don't even know that plumber was in this.
Right.
You don't know.
Just put it in much smaller font size, sponsor.
It's you could put it on the screen if you had a screen, but a lot of assistants don't have a screen. So you have to say it.
Yeah, right.
And that's the Google change log. Man, he gave you both keys, huh? Nice.
I love it.
All right, Mike Elgin, you wanted to talk a little bit about YouTube's recommendations.
Yes. So
this is a big problem.
Yes, it is. So people believe it's a kind of a consensus in the public sphere that YouTube algorithms radicalize you. So let's say you're interested in Legos.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to pick a fairly non-controversial. But imagine something horrible, but like, let's start with Legos. And you see a nice Lego video, and the idea is that the recommendations take you deeper and deeper into a rabbit hole of content in that sphere, no matter what it is. So if it's politics, and let's say you're left-leaning a little bit, okay? The videos will take you lefter and lefter and lefter, and next thing you know, you're Trotsky.
Right.
Watching videos about radical revolution and all this kind of stuff. Or if it's about violence, or if it's about sex, or if it's about, you know, any sort of political topic.
It was a year ago that Zeynep Tufekci wrote about this in the New York Times. Her op-ed piece was YouTube, the Great Radicalizer, and she gave a lot of examples.
Yes,
that she did herself. She experimented with it. That you know, you would watch one video and then the next recommendation. And by the way, there's of course a number of ways Google YouTube recommends. One is with a list of videos, but there's always that play next one.
Right.
And she was saying the play next one often gets more and more radical. So if you start looking for keto diet recipes, then you get vegetarian recipes, then you get vegan recipes. Right. That's kind of how it works. And she had a lot of examples in her piece. Well, The Verge has apparently blown the lid off of this.
Yep.
Because when employees reported or complained about it or mentioned toxic videos, this is it's not The Verge. Let me give credit to where credit's due. It's Bloomberg.
Yep.
And then those employees, those YouTube employees warned executives. The executives said, okay, never mind. This is a big problem that YouTube's known about it and hasn't done anything about it is a huge
problem. Stop listening, Google.
Yeah.
Your phone is going. But worse than that, a YouTube executive has denied that the
recommendations,
the rabbit hole effect even exists.
Yeah.
They deny the whole thing. And I'm trying to bring up the story, but I think I have also turned off data.
was it Wojcicki that denied this? Or
no, executive? it was another executive.
In fact, I have stories galore along this. YouTube has decided to leave neo-Nazi propaganda online.
Right.
They've marked it, but they haven't taken it down.
And I saw a conversation talking about how, so there's white supremacy and then there's white nationalism. And
Facebook has finally decided that white nationalism equals white supremacy.
Exactly, which the white nationalists are not happy about.
No, we're not better. We're just white.
This is the problem. When we have Mark Zuckerberg making this decision.
Here it is, New York Magazine. By the way, they've been doing a great job. These Intelligencer columns in the New York Magazine are really good. YouTube exec denies the existence of rabbit hole effect that definitely exists.
Yeah.
This was in the New York Times. It's Neil Mullen, who's the chief product officer at YouTube. They said the company does not have a business interest in pushing users towards extreme content. Quote, it's not the case that extreme content drives a higher version of engagement or watch time than the content of other types. It's just that, the gosh was added by Intelligencer. Gosh, YouTube is just so vast, and it's so tough to balance user safety and information integrity with concerns about freedom of speech. We just can't help it.
And it's worth noting that the reporting on this has cited a lot of facts and evidence, and Mohan has not produced any data or facts to support his claim. It's just a claim. It might be true. It's possible. But so far, the weight of evidence is in favor of the rabbit hole.
Here's a BuzzFeed story from January. they want to know, how many clicks through YouTube's Up Next recommendations does it take to go from watching a anodyne PBS clip about the U.S. Congress to an anti-immigrant video from a designated hate organization? 9 degrees of separation. So they started by watching a day in the life of an Arizona rancher.
How a bill becomes a law.
Wow.
Actually, that was the end result.
Oh.
It's top comment. Illegals are our enemies. Flush them out or we are doomed. So
I've heard about this kind of stuff, but I've yet to experience it with my YouTube habits.
But you wouldn't let your kids. You wouldn't. So this is the real problem. People often sit their kids down in front of a YouTube video, and then if autoplay's turned on, it just keeps playing the next video and the next video and the next video and the next video.
Yeah, I need to check with my hard heads because one in particular, my youngest one, he watches YouTube almost as much as I do. I mean, that is our television.
Yeah.
And I have a good idea of the creators that he's watching. I don't know their names, but I know their faces, and I can hear their okay guys. So I know he's watching the same crap over and over again. But I wonder if he's getting fed this little algorithm that everybody else is getting. I'm not.
Here's one example from BuzzFeed. So first they searched for government shutdown 2019 explained. They got a clip called Partial U.S. Government Shutdown Expected to Continue into 2019 from Euronews, a channel with 700,000 subscribers. So they hit that. Then the recommendation algorithm suggested a live President Trump press conference video from another news aggregation channel. From there, videos about the Mexican border, Trump's proposed border wall. Then up next, recommended a video from an immigration news aggregator featuring a compilation of news clips titled Border Patrol Arrests, Deportations, Border Wall, and Mexico Sewage. From there, algorithm took an abrupt turn recommending a video about Miami International Airport, then a series of episodes from a National Geographic TV show called Ultimate Airport Dubai, snakes, firefighters, customs officials, crystal meth, and faulty planes. So, in a way, this confirms what the YouTube guy was saying, which is, well, we're not intentionally getting more extreme.
Right.
Really, the problem is their search recommendation algorithm sucks.
Got to train it.
It just isn't good.
Hire some AI trainers.
Yeah. If you search for impeach the mother or impeach the mother, I don't know how you would impeach the mother. Never mind. You know what? Enough. You get the idea.
Yeah.
I don't even want to go down this rabbit hole anymore.
Yeah. So it's.
It's a problem.
To me, the problem is, yeah, so a lot of this speech that's being banned on social networks and YouTube is constitutionally protected speech. So the government couldn't ban it. Mm-hmm. But
any private business can do whatever it wants. Twitter can ban anybody it wants.
Right. And they're the arbiters. And I just think it's problematic because of the rabbit hole effect is essentially an algorithmic thing run amok. You can't really understand what algorithms are going to do at this scale, I don't think. And as Zuckerberg said when he was being grilled by Congress, oh, don't worry. Within a few years, we're going to have AI that's just going to make all these decisions behind the scenes. You'll never have to worry about this again.
Silicon Valley's and punt.
If that makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside, you've been drinking the same stuff we have because...
Silicon Valley has a couple of default positions they punt to. Right. That's one.
Yep.
The AI will solve it.
Yep.
The other one, which is becoming more popular, is, oh, don't worry, universal basic income will solve it.
Right.
We'll just give everybody a few $1,000s a month. And
right. AI will do all the work. People are basically worthless and just want to sit at home spending money or whatever.
So we'll pay them $3,000 a month to do that.
Right.
Where that money's coming from, I don't know.
You forgot the I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's right.
That's it.
We're sorry. We didn't mean to do that. It was a bug.
So easy to apply.
Silicon Valley actually has more excuses than anything else.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It was only a few of you affected, not everybody.
They've become incredibly adept. You know what they're like? They're like those preachers who say the world's going to end next month.
Right.
And then it doesn't end.
Yeah.
Those preachers become really good at coming up with excuses for why the world didn't end, but it's going to end.
And if you want to see this firsthand, search YouTube for Harold Camping. Harold Camping, and he's in the Bay Area. He's been
saying the world's going to end for years.
But you realize at the end that he actually believed it because he gave actual date. He's like, here it comes. It's going to be Tuesday. And, of course, Tuesday, nothing happened. And then, anyway.
What is he? Does he wake up on Wednesday and say, oh, crap. The world didn't end.
Yeah,
and then what is he?
Right. I don't know. It's funny. But in YouTube's defense, I think the vast majority of people who are listening to this, it's probably the greatest resource. If you wanted to encapsulate humanity and all of its knowledge, YouTube wouldn't be a bad resource. I mean, if you want to learn how to fix your garbage disposal.
No, YouTube is a huge.
YouTube is fantastic.
Valuable resource.
Right. Love it.
We don't want to get rid of it.
No.
We just want to kind of maybe some oversight. Maybe do it right. But maybe this is an impossible task. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
YouTube seems to think it is.
I just think one last point on this. The companies like Google and Facebook and others will say, oh, it's just the algorithms. They're just doing their thing. We have such scale, yeah. et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Why do we need these algorithms? Why do we need so much automation? The reason they love algorithms is because they're measuring what people are looking at, how long they're watching, what they're clicking on, where they're going. And this is, they believe, is monetizable.
Because it works for them.
They learn about who you are.
It makes a very sticky
and they
product.
They can sell products.
Plus, humans are expensive, and there aren't, frankly, enough humans in the world
right.
to monitor all the crap right. that's being posted on YouTube.
But it's an old-fashioned concept. But I would actually love it if YouTube didn't have any algorithms. Just
maybe search, that's the solution.
Just search algorithms. That's it. Let me search.
That's the solution. What's the recommendation? That's attempt to monetize better. Right. Don't do the recommend. Just turn it off. That's an easy solution.
There's an unspoken assumption that we have to let these companies invade our privacy, get to know us so they can make trillions and billions of dollars. Why do we support that? Why are we so invested in the Googles and the Facebooks yeah. becoming even larger?
Turn off
and
the
more
algorithms.
Powerful?
Right. Because they're not working. Turn them off. And right. of course, technologist response is no. We're just going to make them better. We're going to make them work.
Yeah.
But they have yet to do it.
Right.
I think that's interesting. Would YouTube be any worse if the next video didn't autoplay, if it didn't recommend a whole bunch of... No, you just search for the next one you right. want to see.
Right. And put an ad there on the page.
They'd make just as much money. Or maybe almost as much. I mean, they wouldn't be as sticky, except I think they would, because you're there for the value you get from it, and there's genuine value there.
I've never seen a relevant ad ever coming from Google. The only site that does that well is Instagram to me.
Oh, they do it really well.
Everything they advertise, I want it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. They've gotten a lot better.
I don't know what, that's why I talk about a lot of other reasons, but the main reason I left Instagram is I was buying too much.
Worked too well.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm wearing my Instagram underwear today. It's bamboo, you know.
Yeah. Don't get a sliver. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, now we're at the bottom of the barrel. So there's a bunch of very just weird stories about, like that woman who entered Mar-a-Lago bearing 4 smartphones, 2 passports.
I never thought China would be a country that would spy.
A USB. Yeah. She has 2 Chinese passports and a USB device containing malware. She said, I'm going to a pool party. So they, to the Secret Service. She said, I'm a member. I want to use the pool. Showed the passports. Agent said, well, she's not on the membership list, but a club manager said, I think she's the daughter of a member. So they let her in.
Turns out she
agents
had no
say
suit.
When they asked Chang if the member was her father, she did not answer definitively, but they thought it might be a language barrier. So they said, oh, screw it. Let her in. It's a secret freaking service. By the way, the president was there at the time.
The thing with the Secret Service, and this is one of the problems with so much stuff happening at Mar-a-Lago, is that they have no right to block anyone from coming into Mar-a-Lago.
It's a public place.
Right.
They can keep you out of the White House.
It's privately owned by the president. So they're in this weird position where they're supposed to let people in,
yeah,
but they're also supposed to protect the president. So
yeah, anyway. You could say I'm a member and it has nothing to do with anything. So once she got in, she told the front desk receptionist she was there to attend the United Nations Chinese American Association event scheduled for that evening. There was no event. So that's when they called the agents. The agents told her, no, I'm sorry, ma'am. You have to use the spy entrance. And so she go around back
and get in line.
Get in line.
Like all the other spies.
Just wild. I mean,
if she was a halfway competent spy, she would have just gotten in and installed the malware. And
she had 4 cell phones, a laptop, an external hard drive, and a thumb drive containing malware, plus 2 passwords and no swimsuit. See, if you're going to say you're going to a pool party, right. at least bring a swimsuit.
How hard is that to buy a swimsuit in Florida?
There's no indication she was ever near the president. So don't, it's okay. That's weird story number one. Weird story number two, the Department of Justice has threatened the Oscars.
Finally.
It's about time we got the DOJ involved. The Department of Justice told the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, Steven Spielberg's been saying, oh, we can't give Oscars to streaming movies. They have to open in the theater, and that's the current rule. Uh-huh. The chief of the DOJ's antitrust division, taking on the really big ones, McCann Delrahim, wrote to AMPS on March 21st to express concerns the new rules would be written in a way that tends to suppress competition. Yes, that big monopoly, the Academy Awards. I don't even know what to say. I agree the DOJ is right. They shouldn't ban streaming movies, but I don't know. Is it a federal? They're kind of making a federal case out
of it. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, we don't need government intervention.
In the Academy Awards.
It's an academy. They can give awards.
Yes. You know what? If I wanted to give an award to podcasters, but it can only be podcasters who are 5'10" or higher or above, I could.
I'd be okay with that.
It's the tall awards. It's not illegal.
And I think you actually have the right to do that. And, and the other
thing. I think I do.
I think
I wouldn't want to, but I could. How tall are you, Ant?
6'2".
See?
He's a supporter.
I'm surrounded by tall people.
you should actually have awards and give it to podcasters, but only if they're on the Twit Network.
Okay, you're all winners.
Yeah, all right. I'm in.
Arizona Beverages, you know, they make that the tea in the really tall cans.
Yeah, you get a whole can.
Get a whole can of tea. Knocked offline by ransomware. They're one of the largest beverage suppliers in the U.S. They're still rebuilding their network 2 weeks after ransomware hit, wiping hundreds of Windows computers and servers, effectively shutting down sales operations for days. More than 200 servers and network computers displayed the message, "Your network was hacked and encrypted." The company's name was in the ransom note, so this was a targeted attack. They put up the notices. We've seen them everywhere now. The little hand-printed signs you put in the window saying, please don't power on, copy files, or connect to the network. Your laptop may be compromised.
They never would have tried this against Red Bull.
Because they got energy.
Too much caffeine. They never have gotten
it. And here's the best news. A day after the attack hit, the staff found the backup system wasn't configured properly and were unable to retrieve data for days until the company signed an expensive contract to bring in Cisco incident responders. They had to rebuild the entire network from scratch. Since the outbreak, the company has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on new hardware, software, and recovery costs.
You know, there's a general war between hackers and malware distributors and the legitimate world, and I think the legit world is losing because there's so many stories about this kind of thing. MySpace, which I learned still exists.
Oh my God, they lost all the music.
Yeah, Asus. Yeah, you buy a brand new Asus computer and you have
malware
digitally signed
sent to it.
Malware.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going on. I'm working on a piece right now about malware on legitimate authorized products, software and hardware. It's amazing.
It seems likely that we don't know, but it seems likely that Asus had been hacked probably by a nation state.
Yes.
They said it was an advanced persistent threat. In other words, the hackers were sitting in the network for some period of time. Right. What was interesting about the malware, it affected many, many computers, but only 600 actually had a payload.
They had a list of MAC addresses. It sounds to me like something China would do. They're going after dissidents.
You can think of a lot of scenarios. Let's say you're Saudi Arabia. Not that they would ever hack
anything. They wouldn't do that.
But let's say you're Saudi Arabia, and what you did is you put a little sniffer outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., and copied all the MAC addresses of Asus laptops going into the building. You now have a list of MAC addresses, and you implant malware in Asus, and it infects only those computers.
Right.
Fish in a barrel.
Here, have some more, McCallum. Thank you. Finally, this is one that's got me all head up. Andreas Gall was on a business trip to Sweden. He is an Apple employee. He was carrying a MacBook and an iPhone XS. Both on the screen, the iPhone XS flashed on the lock screen, confidential and proprietary. The MacBook Pro bore a sticker that said property of Apple, proprietary. He was stopped by Customs and Border Protections at a San Francisco International Airport. They ordered him to unlock the phone and hand it over. Gall told him, "I can't do that. I don't own it. It's Apple's. I have to consult the lawyer or the employer because I have an NDA with Apple that specifically, explicitly says I can't do that." He wrote in his Medium post, this request seemed to aggravate the customs officers. They informed me I had no right to speak to an attorney at the border despite being a U.S. citizen, and threatened me that failure to immediately comply with their demand is a violation of federal criminal code. They questioned him for about an hour, let him go, but they stripped him of his global entry card. They also gave him a handwritten note with the supervisor's name and phone number and said, have your boss at Apple call it. Wow. ACLU has filed a civil rights complaint over this. We've been hearing about this stuff all along. It doesn't happen all that often, but Gal's between a rock and a hard place. You don't want to mess with Apple. And at the same time, you probably don't want to mess with armed border guards. So I don't know what the right answer is here.
Yeah, it's problematic. One of the benefits of having a Pixelbook, which if you're an Apple employee, power wash it before you travel, yep, and then just log back in when you get to wherever you're going. But he might have been transporting data on that system that was Apple Secrets.
Apple Secrets. Yeah. He's the former CTO of Mozilla.
Yeah.
And is a U.S. citizen, actually a naturalized citizen. He said, when I became a citizen, I swore to defend the Constitution. That's why I'm filing a civil rights complaint with the help of the ACLU for unlawful detaining and violation of my constitutional rights.
It's good because we can get this into the courts and we can figure out what the rules are, maybe. And we're going to see a lot more of this. I mean, this is in the U.S. Customs, every country has its customs agents.
It's frankly hard to get into Canada.
Yeah. I was detained leaving Morocco last time because we had 16 bottles of wine.
I would have stopped you,
and
too.
They're like, oh, that's
I
way
hope you
too
handed
much
one over.
they're like, oh, they had to call the supervisor. And I was like, well,
are you allowed?
Apparently so, because eventually they let us. We're like, we're leaving. We're not Muslim. It's like, it's fine. It's, you know, and they were like, that's a lot of wine.
That's a lot of wine. Yeah, so. You know, our wine isn't that good. What are you taking 16 bottles for?
It's like, dude, when I left France, I had 27 bottles, one said, of which was a Magnum.
Bring more. Yeah. Would you like to take more, please? All right. We're going to wrap this up with your picks of the week. Aunt Pruitt from Tech Republic and a great friend. Get some plugs ready too, Aunt. Cue up some good plugs because I want to. You come on and you do this, and you're so.
I got plugs, but I don't have any picks.
Okay, well, do plugs,
actually,
no picks.
I do have one.
You got a minute because I got to do an ad.
My plug. That's
I'm going to give you my pick. Mike Elgin, also here from Elgin.com and GastroNomad.net. My pick is really awesome, and it's right here on this iPad. When you come to Twit, we for a long time, and if you've been here, you know this, had a. Like, how many pages was that thing? A long 4-page disclaimer in tiny print that you were supposed to read and sign, you know, a waiver that we won't sue us and you might fall over stuff and it's a dangerous environment. We're going to take your pictures. And it was a long process. And I've seen people standing at our desk with Moses, who guards us for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got Envoy. This is awesome. And by the way, so many companies in Silicon Valley are using Envoy. It's an iPad kiosk that is a great way to sign in visitors, to protect the security of your environment. So when visitors arrive, they sign in on this iPad. They enter their details. They sign any legal documents, NDAs, in our case, waivers, right on the iPad. Envoy then notifies their host, the person who they're visiting, automatically alerts them when your guest arrives. So that's easy, and they come down and get them. Your employee knows who's coming and when. No more like, oh, I didn't expect you, Dad. Hi. Kind of awkward meetings. Plus, this is smart security, but it doesn't intimidate. There's no more paper log book that really, honestly, what are you going to do, right? When James Rockford comes, you have to show him. I don't know. That's like 80s. You could sign in unlimited visitors. Yes, you can connect it up to a printer to print customized badges. You can have VIP names automatically. If the president arrives, you could send alerts out. He's here. And if there are unattended guests, it will notify security, administrators, whoever you designate. It works perfectly with your existing security system, so it can give Wi-Fi access. It ID checks emergency notifications. You get enhanced security. And best of all, you have a database of people who are visiting your office. You know who's coming. You know when they're on site. You know who they're meeting. You know where they are and why. It already works with everything you've got, including Slack, Google Suite, Box, Salesforce, Chatter. This is a really great, affordable, simple product, and you can get it at envoy.com/twit. Nike uses this, Pinterest, Spotify. 30 million visitors have been welcomed. We've added a handful ourselves using Envoy. Protect your people, your property, your ideas, but do it in a way that's nice, that's welcoming. You don't want to look intimidating. Envoy's great. 10,000 companies worldwide choose Envoy to make a great first impression. We're so thrilled to have an Envoy at our front desk. Envoy, and we do it on an iPad mini, you notice. Envoy, ENVOY.com/twit. You can try it for free. It will work on your existing hardware, so that's awesome. Envoy.com/twit. We thank Envoy for setting this up, our modern front desk. It's great. Mo thanks him, too. He loves it. Envoy.com/twit. Use that URL. Let him know you heard it here. Thank you, Envoy. Okay, you can give this back to Mo. Fortunately, nobody arrived when I was...
There's a line of people just waiting
for that. For the iPad to show up. We got the nice gold one. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's legally binding. Yes, you sign it with your... Yeah. So, Aunt Pruitt, I gave you a minute or two to think about your pick. It could be whiskey. It could be rock and roll music. It could be the Clemson Tigers. Who do you like?
Well, I mean, beyond the Clemson Tigers and the great things that they do for those kids down there and Clemson life and whatnot, I still wanted to continue to plug my friend's community who I met through Google Plus many years ago. And again, I think I've mentioned him on here before, but my man Charlie Hoover on geekquestioner.com. He started a community on Google Plus around just geek questions of the day. And it's not just Star Trek. It's not just Battlestar Galactica or Matt. It's everything. Everything.
Oh, this is nice. I like this.
And half of the stuff, I have no idea what they're talking about, but it's been fascinating to go through and look at those questions and look at what the responses are from the people in the community. And they put the questions out every single day, and you just go in there and comment to leave your response, and people have discussions on there, and they'll do a podcast every week.
This is a great idea.
And it's so fascinating because there's been a whole lot of things on there that I knew absolutely nothing about. You know, I didn't know what a Hufflepuff was.
I do. You're not a geek.
No idea. You know, but there's so many.
What's
so
a Hufflepuff?
Many like that comes up. And I'm like, what are they talking about? And it sends me down a rabbit hole to go look up what a Hufflepuff is. And this is every single day. And he also shares what they call Geekscapes, and they're just
these are beautiful. Who does these? They're gorgeous
from different artists around the globe, and they're beautiful. And
yeah,
it's
they
just
really
something
are.
I look at this every single day. I don't answer the questions every day, but I look at them every single day, and it's just part of my routine, and just takes me away from real life for a minute.
Neat.
But all of that started on Google Plus many years ago, and he built a community with it. They left Google Plus and they're doing it this way strictly through
Good
the website.
For him.
And it's doing really well.
Question of the day. What geeky nicknames have you given some of the tech gadgets in your life and why?
Brilliant question.
Do you name your gadgets? I do. Jerry Pornell started that for me in Byte Magazine. All his computers had names.
Yeah.
You have to name your Wi-Fi access points. So I give them all names. And I had been using dead rock stars. So I had Morrison, Joplin, Winehouse. I really like Winehouse.
My dryer has a name.
What's your dryer's name?
Fred.
Fred Dryer. Okay.
Whatever I've spent the most money on recently, I call it Precious, Lord of the Rings.
My Precious.
Yeah,
that's my Samsung Galaxy S10. Right. It's my Precious.
Or Excalibur from Wayne's World.
Yes.
But I use the same names over and over. So
yeah.
But that's Precious. My pick of
I
the
love
week.
It. geekquestioner.com. Join the community. Ant's there. Showing his guns.
That's guns? No, man. These are cannons.
Get cannons! Look at this picture of Ant. Oh, my God. You just... It's down at the bottom here. Let me... What are you... You look like The Rock, for crying out loud. Look at this guy. Do you want to meet him in a dark alley? No.
That's the least geeky picture of a geek I've ever seen.
I know. Well, it just shows you. You can be ripped and a geek. You can be. Wow. Thank you, Ant.
About Google Inbox.
You know what cracks me up? Because he's about the sweetest guy I ever met in the whole wide world. But he looks scary in that picture. Man.
Just a pose.
You know what? Big guys, I've discovered, big guys are always sweet. Because they got nothing to prove, right? They can squash
that's
you.
That's the thing. I tell people, I don't have anything to prove.
No. It's the little guys you got to watch out for.
That's right.
You can tell a lot from that picture. Notice the survival bracelet. So he's expecting the zombie apocalypse.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's a paracord, braided paracord, so that he can, like, you know.
Oh, you are a geek.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody, I can't remember who gave me that. Right now I wear a... breast cancer awareness bracelet.
Yes,
and I've
because
been wearing it for about 2 years now for the missus.
Strong men can wear pink. How's the missus doing, by the way?
She is slowly but surely turning into an internet star.
Nice.
Because of our podcast, people.
Oh, that's
people
right.
Love her.
Good. Yeah.
They love her.
Yeah. Aunt and the missus. Plug that one.
That's the podcast. Everyday people doing everyday. You have to. X that out.
Yes.
That's the name of our podcast.
Stuff. Everyday people doing everyday stuff.
That's correct. And it's you can find it on all of the different podcatchers, including Google, which at one time it wasn't showing up on Google. I don't know why. But yeah, it's out there. And we just talk about everyday random stuff that we would talk about if the mics weren't on.
Good.
Every single
and it's
day.
Doing well.
Yeah. Been having some fun with that. And like I said, people are starting to know more about her. Dan Patterson, he's been listening to it.
Oh, nice.
And he says, man, I swear I feel like I really know everybody in your house now.
That's what, you know, that's really the secret and strength of podcasting. It's intimate and you
authentic.
You become friends.
You're
it's authentic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll sit back here on a Thursday night or something like that. I try to have it done by Friday. And we'll just sit back over there in the corner and just chat. That's all it is.
AntPruitt.com/podcast.
That's it.
Everyday people. Everyday stuff.
It's a podcast every day.
Every day? Every day.
Well, it ain't every day. No.
No.
It's every week. Every week, people.
Every week, but we're doing everyday
Mike Elgin.
Okay, so... I was going to use as my pick of the week Spark Mail for Android because it scratches.
Wasn't that a Google?
Oh no,
they purchased it and killed it.
No,
they?
No, no. The
it sounds familiar.
This is a popular email. It's a company that has lots of mostly Mac based, iOS based products.
Oh yeah, I've used Spark on iOS.
They're now on Android recently, and they timed it to coincide with the demise of Inbox because it does a lot of the stuff
Sparrow
Inbox.
Sparrow that Google
Sparrow
bought.
You're thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this has existed on iOS, on Apple OS's for 12 years. It does stuff like smart notifications, email pinning, like reminders, smart reminders, stuff like that.
Smart
but I'm not
going to
recommend, I'm not gonna recommend it
not
because
gonna
that
recommend
dirty
it?
Rotten bastard Ron Richards.
Recommended it on All About Android.
I was listening to it on the way to the show
it.
And I'm like, Richards!
Richards!
So I'm not going to mention it. All right. So instead, I'm going to recommend something similar but more frivolous, which is a Google Plus. I'm sorry. It's a Google. Last time I will ever say Google Plus.
No. No.
It's a Chrome extension called Inbox Theme for Gmail.
Oh.
So it makes Gmail look like but have none of the functionality of Inbox. So if you like the color scheme and the stuff like that, you can now have that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Gmail. Yeah.
Do you have the answer, the question answers and all that stuff? And like the smart replies is what I'm trying to say.
It doesn't have smart replies.
That was the thing I liked the best.
Right. But it does prioritize your inbox. And surface the most important things, and it has smart notifications that will, again, we're talking about Spark, not the...
Oh, you're talking about Spark.
Spark, the thing I'm not recommending, because Ron Richards already did it on All About Android, has like, it'll only give you a notification if you have an incoming inbox that's both important and from an important person.
Oh.
So you can sort of not that. Be yeah. spammed with notifications, but also get notified when you have a truly yeah. important email. So it's very intelligent. It has that sort of intelligent, kind of helping you behind the scenes feel of inbox, and it'll support all kinds of different platforms. So email from Microsoft, Google, and a bunch of other companies.
This.
And you can put them, all the email addresses, multiple email addresses into a single inbox. So it's a really intelligent, powerful thing that is just newly arrived on Android.
There is a free tier, but there's also a premium tier, and they have enterprise. But I think for the individual, the free is fine, right?
Exactly, because the paid tier is really for work
teams.
Groups. So it's a lot
of
it's a lot of sharing functionality and stuff. But the free version is full function for an individual.
You know what'd be interesting is to set up an email address for the family.
Yeah.
And then use the team features of Spark because you can discuss something.
Yeah.
So you can have like almost a side chat during. Right. So like if you had a family email address, all the stuff that you know, you'd have all the stuff for the family go there and then you could discuss it. Treat your family like a team.
Right.
And that way, if you don't like somebody, you can just fire them.
That's right. Junior, you're fired.
You're fired. Spark is at sparkmailapp.com. It was desktop, now available on Android. And the Chrome extension is at the
just
Chrome Web Store.
Inbox theme for Gmail. Just search for it on the Chrome Store.
Make it, you know, at least this takes some of the sting out. Make Gmail look better.
Right.
It looks a lot better than
it's like
Gmail.
Chewing gum when you've quit smoking. You know,
yeah,
it's like, it's something.
This is the Nicorette of,
exactly.
of Inbox. Inbox Nicorette. Mm. All right, ladies and gentlemen, time to wrap this up. Amp Pruitt, great to have you. Always a pleasure. Come back anytime. You can see him on Tech
Thank
Republic.
Thank you for having me.
AmpPruitt.com, AntPruitt.com. And if you're in the Charlotte area,
go look him up.
Get him for IT support, right?
That would be no.
No. Don't ask him how that works. Why can't I print, Ant?
Oh, my gosh.
My printer's IT, not working.
IT. I know. I'm so tired of IT.
I know. That's a hard job. That's all,
so tired
all the respect in the world.
I mean, I do get to look at, you know, old school 4GL code, so that's fun. But still, I'm... About had enough of IT.
Thank you, Ant. Great to have you. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers also to Mike Elgin. You didn't even show us this thing you've been doing this whole time. We should talk about this.
Okay, so I've got a Pixel 3 going on here.
He's got one of these great Joby tripods. By the way, that's the fancy one, which I really like.
Yeah, I use this also
that's
for
the metal
my DSLR.
One.
But the whole show, I've been using the photo booth feature of the
iPhone.
Photo thing in the Pixel 3.
Oh, okay.
Pixel 3. So
Pixel 3.
Whenever we smile and our eyes are open, it has taken a picture.
So, so it's choosing the best pictures, and it says, you're smiling and your eyes are open, that's a good picture.
It's using AI to see if everybody is smiling. And
this is kind of like the Google Clip, basically.
Yes.
Except smarter.
Yes. And I've been using this in Mexico, like during our experience, and it's, we're having a good time making tacos and learning to cook and stuff, and I just have it taking pictures, and all the pictures are great, because it's like everybody's smiling.
Are you putting them in Mike's nice book?
A few of them might be. We also have a link to the Mexico City experience, but a disproportionate number of my photos were taken using this feature. So I've been doing it today.
So you don't actually have to take pictures.
Right. So this is the Mexico City experience pictures.
But these are not done that way.
Many of them are.
Okay.
So,
can people get on Mike Elgin's nice book?
How do you do that? You go to my blog. Or my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed, and I occasionally promote the nice book.
So this is the hungry book. Oh my God.
I got a lot of food in there. So yeah, this
Come
is my
on,
nice
man.
Book.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
All done automatically.
So those are churros from Puyol.
These are churros?
Yeah.
I never saw a round churro.
If you're familiar with the chef's table, you know about Puyol.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I have that on my, I love Chef's Table.
That's a great show.
Oh.
Great show.
Yeah. But anyway, so for if you get together with friends, you don't want to be taking pictures of people while you're having fun, having drinks, but you put this camera on.
Is this one of them?
That might be one of them.
Let go and let Google. There's no photographer in this.
It's not required that everyone, so I think more than half of them are smiling.
Here's another one.
Yeah.
Look at that.
And so, and you want to take a selfie, you're like, everybody just look at the camera and smile. Boom, selfie's done.
I love this.
It's a great feature that a lot of people don't think about.
AI done right.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, and really, this is a great way because, you know, you're all together and you have to get the waiter to take a picture. And
so
then
the picture in the upper left-hand corner, this is a birthday party we're celebrating. My friend Lenny, who was with us in the Mexico City experience, big smile.
That was automatic. It even got the rocket going off.
Yeah.
Man.
This is right before Lenny's beard bursts into flame.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. This is before the accident.
Before the accident. Last picture of Lenny before the accident. But it's a good one.
Didn't take any pictures of the screaming or the crying.
So what's that feature called?
It's called Photo Booth. And you just on the
you
camera.
You go in the camera on the Pixel and you say Photo Booth.
And you go to More and then you Photo Booth and you just let it run. And it just takes great pictures automatically.
Wow. So, this was not one of them.
That was my Sony.
But that churro does look good.
It does.
It's great framing.
Yeah.
Ah, no, this is great framing.
Sugar.
That is great framing. That is a food I will never again be able to eat. Every time I see something like that, that's what goes through my mind.
You can eat that. That
one. Don't worry. I got you covered on the diet.
All right. Thank you. I want to look like you. Ant Pruitt, Mike Elgin, and you, thank you so much for being here. We do This Week in Google Wednesdays, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Come by and say hi. You can watch or listen live at twit.tv/live. We have a few streams for you to choose from. If you're doing that, go into the chat room. They're nice people. irc.twit.tv.
Love the chat room.
They're great, aren't they? It's a lot of fun. And then if you you're working or something, you know, you can always get a copy of the show on demand so you can listen at your leisure. Just go to twit.tv/twig or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. I'm going to go away for a little while. This is my last show before vacation. I'll be in Hawaii for the next week. Jason Howell will be taking over the show next week. We've got people hosting all throughout the week. So the shows, of course, will go on. And I'll see you back here sometime in the distant future. I'd actually remember. Someday. No, I'm only gone for a week. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.